I'd like to call to order the Oro Valley Town Council regular and study session for December 2nd, 2020, online Zoom meeting. Mr. Standish, roll call.
Vice Mayor Barrett?
Here.
Councilmember Bowen? Councilmember Green?
Here.
Councilmember Jones-Ivy? Councilmember Nicholson?
Here.
Councilmember Solomon?
Here.
And Mayor Winfield?
Here. So we have a quorum, right, Mr. Standish?
That's correct, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. I'd like to move to go into executive session with the town manager, assistant town manager, town attorney, legal services director, and the town clerk. I need a second.
Second.
Councilmember Green, second. Mr. Standish, a roll call vote, please.
Vice Mayor Barrett?
Yes.
Councilmember Bowen? Councilmember Green?
Yes.
Councilmember Jones-Ivy? Councilmember Nicholson?
Yes.
Councilmember Solomon? And Mayor Winfield?
Yes, I didn't hear Councilmember Solomon.
Yes.
Thank you. So just as a reminder, Council, you'll exit out of this public session and go into the private executive session Zoom meeting. Thank you.
Mike Standish, can you email me the link to the executive session Zoom meeting?
Will do.
I'd like to reconvene the Oro Valley Town Council regular and study session, December 2nd, 2020, online Zoom meeting. Mr. Standish, roll call, please.
Yes, Mayor Barrett. Oh, I think you're on mute.
Vice Mayor Barrett, you're on mute.
Might be having some technical issues, but she is present. Councilmember Bowen? I do not see Councilmember Bowen on just yet. Councilmember Green? Councilmember Jones-Ivy? Councilmember Nicholson?
Here.
Councilmember Solomon?
Here.
And Mayor Winfield?
Here. Have we resolved the... are there any technical issues? Vice Mayor Barrett, can you respond? So I didn't hear Vice Mayor Barrett or Council Member Green. I trust that we'll get that resolved here at some point. And it looks like Council Member Bond has joined us. I will pause for a moment until the flag video is displayed. And then if you would join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. Let's see. Okay, Mr. Standish, upcoming meetings.
Hey, Mr. Mayor. The Historic Preservation Commission will hold their next regular session on December 7th at 5 p.m. via Zoom. The December 14th Water Utility Commission meeting has been canceled. The December 15th Budget and Finance Commission regular session has been canceled. And also the December 16th Town Council regular session has also been canceled. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Council reports. Any council members have a report this evening?
Mr. Mayor.
Vice Mayor Barrett.
Yes, I'd just like to provide a report that
The new playground at Naranja Park that we've opened has been receiving a lot of happy and positive use. And I've taken my children at one point to play on it, and they said that they heard children the whole time saying, "This is so fun. This is so cool. I love this." So I just wanted to provide that as a brief council report that the one time that I was able to go and visit it, that it was being positively received by the community. So thank you.
Thank you. I'd like to make a few comments this evening. One is a prepared statement, and I'll read this. The town council appreciates hearing the comments at the last meeting regarding the changes in format to our Zoom meeting. We recognize that virtual meetings are not ideal, but given the circumstances, we want to utilize the technology that gives us the greatest ability to manage these meetings efficiently and securely, allow for meaningful participation by our residents, and ensure we're prepared to transition to hybrid meetings once our council chambers have been renovated and updated with the technology needed to allow for that, which we expect will be ready for use by April 2021. While the Zoom webinar format doesn't allow you to see each other, the council does see who is on the call. And on balance, the benefits to this format outweigh the downsides. I asked the town manager to further explain the reasons behind the change, and she's planning to do that in her report in just a few minutes. And for your information, there are currently 59 participants in our meeting this evening. I want to also just express appreciation to our community for your compliance to the guidelines that have been provided to us by CDC, by the Arizona State Health Department, by the Pima County Health Department, and when I say that, I'm talking about face coverings, being physically distancing ourselves, washing our hands, and when we're not feeling well, staying at home, and helping preserve the health of others. Of course, all of these actions are intended to do that, to preserve the health, our health, and the health of others. And I think our community has done and will continue to do a remarkable job at looking out for each other. As a result of that, we've had relatively low cases in Oro Valley, but like the county and the state and the nation, we have seen an increase. We've had the highest number of cases since the 4th of July week. We've had back-to-back weeks of over 50 COVID cases. Unfortunately, we have lost some of our residents to the COVID, to the coronavirus. And of course, we give our condolences to those families who've lost loved ones, as well as have lost loved ones through other illnesses and tragedies. But I want to just reinforce that as tired as we all are of this pandemic, we need to remain vigilant. We need to do everything that we can to adhere to these guidelines. And by doing this, we will preserve the health of our community, and that will also help preserve the economic health of our community. We certainly want our businesses to remain open. We appreciate the steps they've taken to ensure that they're following these same public health guidelines so that you feel confident in visiting and doing business with our local businesses. So thank you so much. And because we will not be having a council meeting before the holidays, our next council meeting will be January. I want to wish everybody a happy holiday and hope that you stay safe and have an enjoyable time with your loved ones. Thank you. With that, we'll go to the town manager's report. Ms. Jacobs.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and the members of council. Just to go into a little bit more detail, as the mayor mentioned, regarding our Zoom format, again, for the benefit of our viewing public, I just wanted to alert you, you know, with so many participants, we do need to have a way that will allow the council staff and presenters to mute and unmute themselves. And so there are some challenges with that with Zoom. Recently, Zoom started requiring passwords for all meetings. So that's precipitated part of this change. It was causing issues with setting up meetings and some issues with our participants as well. And the webinar format removes that barrier. Also, we want a way for residents to be able to interact with the council using both video and audio. And then, of course, we must be able to address these potential security issues with both video and audio as communities and other organizations across the country. They have, unfortunately, experienced some situations that they would have preferred not experiencing. We are very fortunate we haven't at this point. And then, of course, we want to be able to accommodate a large number of participants efficiently. So our new format actually provides for panelists versus co-hosts. And what that means is that those people who are speaking need to be able to, as I mentioned, mute and unmute. But we also, with this new process, it ensures that security is maintained, that no one inadvertently turns off the backup recording. So as a co-host, somebody can turn on or off the backup recording, and we use that. That's very important for us to have a backup for our meetings. It also allows for an attendee mode, this new format, and that's how the town is able to accommodate residents during the call to the public. So that reserves the host role to the staff that are specifically managing the meeting, and that helps ensure that efficiency and security. So members of the public join as attendees, and that does allow them to see the panelists and hosts. And I was just informed by our chief information officer that we think we now have the ability to at least show our attendees how many are on, not the individuals, but how many. And we will continue to. Sometimes there are so many features in these things that it just takes a while to tap into them. And then, of course, attendees can raise and lower their hands to be called on during the meeting. So this webinar format is really important for us to have in place for our new chambers, as the mayor mentioned. We'll be moving into that in April. And so what we will be able to do in our renovated chambers is allow a hybrid. People will be able to both participate as attendees and as speakers from their homes, as well as be able to be physically present in the facility. So in the meantime, the mayor will let you know how many people are on the call periodically during the course of the meeting, as he did earlier. And we do appreciate your patience in dealing through these technical issues. So pretty soon, before we know it, we will be back to in-person meetings in our renovated chambers, which, by the way, will have a much greater capacity for us to be able to accommodate post-COVID up to 180 people in that room in the future. So we're very excited about that. We're also very excited that the University of Arizona Center for Innovation at Oro Valley, that's our new bioscience incubator and innovation park, is going to have its grand opening tomorrow. And I know several council members will be participating in the limited scheduled in-person tours. It's unfortunate we can't have a big ribbon cutting this year due to COVID, but UACI has been working with the media today, and I think that our community is going to be very excited to see some activity and a virtual tour on our news media here later this week. So we very much look forward to welcoming startup bioscience and biotechnology companies to Oro Valley and hopefully watching them grow and expand right here in our wonderful community. So that certainly is our goal. Also, I did want to provide an update on two projects that the town council asked the town attorney and I to take on at your last meeting 2 weeks ago. The first was to explore and convene with the adjacent HOAs and HSL, look at solutions for the Push 9 course. I did want to let you know that we had a meeting today with representatives of the three HOAs. We very much appreciate their attendance and of course, representative from HSL. I think it was a very productive meeting, and we are in the process of scheduling a subsequent meeting in the near future. And then also you asked the town attorney and I to negotiate with Romspen for the former Vistoso Golf Course. I will tell you, due to the Thanksgiving holidays, we were not able to get a meeting scheduled until Friday, so I don't have anything to report, but that Mr. Cohen and I will be having that remote meeting on Friday, and I will continue to keep the council updated and as much as is appropriate, that without revealing any privileged negotiations, I certainly will try to keep our community updated as well. And then lastly, I'd like to join the mayor on behalf of the staff in wishing happy holidays and Merry Christmas to all of our residents, to you as members of the town council. And let's all celebrate 2021 as a much better year with a new outlook and some positive changes. So we certainly wish all of you and all of our residents a very happy new year, and we're looking forward to a very positive new year. Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of council.
Thank you, Ms. Jacobs. We appreciate that report, and we look forward to future reports. No, I neglected. I wanted to express appreciation. There's a lot that goes into preparing for these town council meetings, and I want to thank staff for all the behind work that goes into to making these meetings successful. So thank you. the agenda will remain as was posted. I'd like to thank everyone for taking time to join us this evening. This meeting is taking place, as you know, online to comply with the ongoing social distancing requirements and ensure the community's ability to participate. In order to participate, one must be logged into Zoom directly by computer or telephone. For those who are unfamiliar with the Zoom software, I'd like to provide an overview on how to participate. Everyone's microphone, except for the individual that has the floor, will be muted throughout the meeting to ensure a smooth and efficient meeting as possible. Only select staff can turn on your microphone at the appropriate time if you'd like to ask a question or provide comments. I'll do my best to let everyone know when it is appropriate to raise your hand for a particular agenda item. If you wish to address the council on any agenda item or during the call to audience, please raise your hand only when I announce it's appropriate to do so. And there are two ways to do this. For those participating on any platform other than by phone, find and select the participants icon. This will open a dialog box that lists, well, I don't think it does list all the participants in the meeting, but I think you click on the hand icon and that will indicate to us if you're wanting to speak. And then for those participating by phone, you want to press *9 to raise your hand. So please wait to raise your hand until the appropriate agenda item has been announced and after I announce the opportunity to do so. Otherwise, we won't be able to discern which topic you wish to address in relation to the agenda. Our aim is to proceed in a timely and efficient manner, and we certainly appreciate your patience. Once your hand is raised, staff will be alerted to your request to speak. So please raise your hand if you have a question or comment after I announce the appropriate time to do so. At the appropriate time, I'll call on those with their hands raised to provide questions or comments. I will then announce your name and staff will unmute or your access so that you can speak. Please make sure that you're not also muted on your personal device. As with all town council meetings, please clearly state your name and whether or not you are an Oro Valley resident. Also, speakers are limited to no more than 3 minutes. A timer will be used as with in-person meetings, and we ask that you please respect the 3-minute limit. At this time, we'll have called to the audience. Some of you in advance have reached out to our town clerk, and so I have a list. But if you're wanting to speak at this during call to the audience, this would be the time to raise your hand. Anyone can speak on a topic other than what's on the agenda. So I currently see two raised hands. And again, there are 52 attendees this evening. Mr. Bill Sugars is our first speaker. And so I'd like to call on Mr. Sugars to address the council. And so staff, if you would enable Mr. Sugars' microphone to speak. And Mr. Sugars, would you like to have your video turned on?
No, I'm eating dinner, so.
Okay. All right.
I'll just talk to you, so.
So if you would please state your name and whether you're a resident of Oral Valley.
Sure. My name is Bill Sugars. I live in Oral Valley on Fairfield Vistoso on the golf course. And first of all, I want to thank the mayor and the council for their quick response on organizing a good conversation with Romsman. And Ms. Jacobs has sort of taken away my first question, which was the fact that the Romsman negotiation was not on the meeting agenda. And I know you cannot discuss or respond to this statement, but what I was hoping to do was see, has the council considered appointing a council member to be part of the town staff in the discussions with Romsman, not to be involved in the negotiation, but to be there to sort of represent the constituents that have expressed over the past 6 months their concerns with the project, with Romsman's proposed project. And we have also had several residents that have expressed a desire for timely updates on the progress of these negotiations. And to that end, could a progress report be part of all future general session agendas? I think the transparency and the information informing the public of what's going on would be critical to keep this issue alive and get the, and hopefully come to a positive outcome of this negotiation. Thank you.
Thank you. We have Ms. Rosa Daly is our next speaker. If you would please state your name and whether you're a resident of Oral Valley, and we'll have, so you're unmuted. Would you like to have the video turned on?
No, thanks.
Okay.
So my name is Rosa Daly, and I'm a resident of Rancho Vistosa, Oral Valley. First, I would just like to thank Mayor Winfield and Mayor Barrett for all the countless hours they spent addressing the Vistoso golf course problem here in Rancho Vistoso. Countless hours. Thank you very much for everything that you have done. Tonight, I would like to address a recent criticism and insults leveled at Mayor Winfield and three members of council, apparently prompted by Mayor Winfield's motion to direct town staff to work with Romsman to purchase the former Vistoso golf course. The negativity and erroneous assumptions appeared in the Explorer letter to the editor entitled Golf Guff. The author of Golf Guff is incorrect in the assumption that Oro Valley taxpayers will be burdened with the purchase of the former Vistoso golf course. The Rancho Vistoso neighborhood surrounding the Vistoso golf course raised over $1.5 million through the conservation fund to purchase the course. Romsman blatantly refused to take fair market value established by an appraisal they directed. The property owner has received his answer on rezoning from this community, but he does not like it or the value it establishes for his property. And he promised to punish the community with continual GPAs until he stopped resisting his outrageous demands. There have also been no shortage of opportunists circling this property for the past 2.5 years for whatever grift they could pull off. The property is in disastrous condition and for all intents and purposes abandoned. It is with this knowledge that I've described above and the engagement of our community for over 9 months that I believe Mayor Winfield brought his motion at the last council meeting. And as I said, I thank you for it. I believe the question posed in the letter was, why is Winfield involved? And what I would do is correct that to say that's Mayor Winfield. And the answer is because he's a leader. And I will get to the rest of the disrespect now. in a second. To be clear, the Rancho Vistoso golf course purchase, many homeowners will be committing five-figure sums. Our personal family donation commitment is $30,000. Would the author of Golf Guff be willing to do that for his town? That's my question. Now I will address the disrespectful insults. The Golf Guff letter referred to Mayor Winfield, Vice Mayor Barrett, Councilmember Jones Ivy, and Nicholson as the Four Horsemen of the El Conquistador, a derogatory biblical reference to the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse, suggesting their willingness to help this community is both evil and catastrophic for the taxpayer. Factual inaccuracies are one thing, but blasphemous insults are just unacceptable. I hope others will join me in speaking out against these inappropriate, unnecessary insults. As we work through this Vistoso golf course issue, there will be some trying times, and people need to remain adult and respectful. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Rich Molnar, if you hit your opportunity to address council, if you'd please state your name and whether you're a resident of Oro Valley, your microphone is on. Would you like your video turned on?
No video, thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Thanks for the opportunity. My name is Rich Molnar. I'm an Oro Valley resident. I live in Rancho Vistoso. Even though today's my 42nd wedding anniversary, I figured I wanted to say something about this letter that Rosa actually beat me to it. My address really is to both the town council members and all the citizens on this call. The comment is on the Explorer newspaper article, which Rosa kind of detailed even better than I would have had. But I just wanted to say that I think this resident doesn't have all the facts. Either that or he has some sort of political agenda, to rile people up as to why the town is buying a golf course, and he's not really telling the entire story. So I wanted to say I don't agree with his writing or what he has to say. But I also wanted to thank you, Mr. Mayor, and the town council members for really acting on this Vistoso golf club problem, which eventually, hopefully, will get funded by the Conservation Fund, and everything will work out as we discussed ad nauseum. That's it. Just wanted to say that. And happy holidays to all. Stay safe.
Thank you. Again, if you would like to address the council during this call to audience, if you would raise your hand. If you're on the phone, you would use your *9. So I have Mr. Richard Beam. This is your opportunity to address the council. Staff, if we could unmute Mr. Beam.
Okay.
I think you could state your name and whether you're a resident of Oro Valley, and this is call to audience.
Yes, my name is Richard Beam, and I'm a resident of Oro Valley. I think both Mr. Molinar and Rosa said a lot of what I wanted to say, so I won't say it again. But what I would add is kind of interesting, and that is that in Mr. Prunty's diatribe today in the Explorer, a golf guff, as it was called, one thing that you may be interested to know is that Mr. Prunty lives in a house high on a hill overlooking the Oro Valley taxpayer-supported golf course. And so every day, taxpayers are shelling out dollars that he's benefiting every day to see his fairways watered and the greens watered and clipped and cut. So he's enjoying, a tremendous view every day at the expense of taxpayers. And so I would say to Mr. Prunty, he should heed the old adage, people that live in glass houses shouldn't throw stones. Why is throwing stones our way when in fact his facts are not supported by the record in terms of how the Vistoso golf course property would be acquired and who would pay for it. And he doesn't understand any of the mechanisms that are in place there. So I like the others, feel that Mayor Winfield and several council members were unfairly criticized by Mr. Prunty. And I can tell you that he seems to be sort of an individual that's kind of wandered off the reservation somewhat on his own with his comments, and it's not really how most residents feel about how this council and our mayor is moving forward on the preservation of the golf course to make it an attempt to make it a conservation easement. So we're behind you, mayor and council, in your work on our behalf over here in Rancho Vistoso. Thank you.
I have, thank you. I have two others that, well, three, and I see Cindy Wicker is on the phone. Yeah, if we could unmute Cindy Wicker. All right.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, this is Cindy Wicker. I am a resident of Oro Valley, and I, unlike the others, did not see the letter in the Explorer. I'm simply calling in because I want to thank you personally, Mr. or Mayor Winfield, for your leadership in guiding the town council to negotiate with Promspan to purchase the former golf course. And Vice Mayor Barrett, you as well should be applauded for your efforts, because when this deal is consummated, it will be an extraordinary achievement and legacy for the entire council, as well as a big win for the Oro Valley taxpayer, because not only will we have open space with the paved walking trails we've been asking for, they've been high demand because we found that out from the Park and Rec survey. But as we all know, because it's been expressed before and it was part of all of this discussion, this arrangement is not going to be burdensome to the taxpayers, because so many residents have pledged funds to offset the purchase, as I said, as you all know. So this is brief. I just want to close by saying that this action is exactly the type of thoughtful and far-sighted leadership we need in our community. I'm just very pleased you're on the council, and well done, all of you. That's all.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Wicker. Teresa Morrow, I have you listed here as wanting to speak. If we could unmute Ms. Morrow. And my apologies if I'm mispronouncing your name. You've been unmuted. If you could state your name and whether you're a resident of Oro Valley.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes.
My name is Teresa Morrow, and I'm a resident of Oro Valley. My husband, Jerry Lounsbury, and I have lived in Vistoso Highlands number 1 for 18 years. And I'm also calling in to voice my concern about Mr. Prunty's information that he submitted to the Explorer. He knowingly misrepresented facts regarding the current status of the closed Vistoso golf course. The Rancho Vistoso community has stood strong for 3 years, and we cannot let a rogue resident spread misinformation that undermines the hard-fought progress and partnership formed with Mayor Winfield, Vice Mayor Barrett, and other town council members. The facts include the following, and this is a bit repetitive of what some others said, but Rancho Vistoso communities have not requested Oro Valley taxpayer dollars for the purchase of the closed golf course. I think that's really important to reiterate. In fact, as Rosa mentioned, the residents have raised more than $1.5 million towards the purchase of the former Vistoso golf course at fair market value through the conservation fund. The goal is to convert the property into a natural park amenity, green space in perpetuity. This is a model for preservation that will benefit all in Oro Valley and should be supported accordingly. The Oro Valley Town Council is the only governing body that has the legal authority and power to effectively address Romspan, the property owner, with respect to the closed and abandoned golf course. The residents have been held at ransom by Romspan for nearly three years. Mayor Winfield and Vice Mayor Barrett listened and responded to the residents. This has resulted in a trusted partnership model that can be leveraged with other Oro Valley communities going forward. So I wanted to express our thanks as well to the support from the mayor, the vice mayor, and the town council. We really appreciate it. Thank you for the opportunity to speak and address this issue.
Thank you. I have one other on the list, and it may be the number 520-877-2585, Linda Longlet. Yep, there we go. If we could unmute the Longlets line. So Linda or Tom, did we unmute them on our end, but they need to unmute themselves? Okay.
Hello, this is Linda Longlet.
Yes. If you could state your name and whether you're a resident of Oro Valley, thank you.
Yes, I'm Linda Longlet. Yes, I am a resident of Oro Valley, and I do not have a question at this time. I did not raise my hand. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I believe that's all, and so we'll close call to the audience, and we'll go to presentations. Just as an update, there are 50 attendees this evening, 66 total participants. That includes the council and staff. We'll go to presentations. Mr. Standish, presentation one.
Presentation regarding the town's progress on implementing the Your Voice, Our Future general plan.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and Council.
Good evening, Melanie.
All right. So my name is Melanie Simpson. I'm a principal planner with the Town of Oro Valley. On behalf of all town departments, it is my pleasure to provide the 2020 progress report on the implementation of the Your Voice, Our Future general plan. Next slide, please. So this annual update is required by state law and recommended in the general plan. But more importantly, this is the town's commitment to fulfill promises made in the general plan. To date, 92% of the action items have been completed, maintained as staff's duties are in progress of being completed. This is a 9% increase from last year's progress report. I will briefly touch on some of the notable achievements and progress made this year in my presentation, but first want to provide some background about the general plan. Next slide, please. The general plan is a 10-year policy document guiding town decisions through 2026. Significant public outreach was collected to create the general plan, which represents the community's vision and guiding principles and was ratified by 71% of the voters. The plan is divided into three main sections, focusing on community, environment, and development. Each section includes goals and policies to fulfill the larger vision. Next slide, please. The plan includes 310 measurable action items to meet the goals and policies that make the vision a reality. These actions are to be addressed throughout the lifespan of the document and may shift as resources and priorities change. To account for this, major actions are prioritized every 2 years through strategic plans adopted by Town Council. Next slide, please. So where are we in this 10-year process? We are about halfway through. There have been two strategic plans based on this general plan, and of importance, three more strategic plans will be created from this general plan. Next slide, please. Overall, there are 310 action items in the general plan. Last year, town staff reported the status on all 310 items, reporting that 69 items were completed and 115 items were maintained. These items are still completed or maintained through staff's daily duties. As such, our focus this year is on the 126 remaining items. These are the items that were previously reported as in progress or future items to be addressed. Next slide, please. Progress has been made on the 126 remaining items. An additional 15 items were completed, but equally important is the amount of items now maintained through staff's daily duties and items that are now in progress. 24 items remain as to be started or evaluated in the future, which I will discuss further in my presentation. Next slide, please. So under the community section, there are 52 remaining items. These items relate to creating a robust economy, having a complete community, safe environment, and exemplary town services. Notable achievements include increasing public outreach. Specifically, when the pandemic started, the town pioneered best practices for community engagement through online videos, which had over 1,400 views, and increased public participation in online meetings. The town's website was also updated this past year, providing more ways for the public to engage, such as the Discuss feature. Significant progress was also made with Parks and Rec Master Plan by completing a needs assessment. Lastly, as the council is very aware, several code amendments were approved this past year, ranging from increasing opportunities for economic development, providing better customer service, and protecting the public. Some actions that are still in progress are completing the second phase of the Parks and Recreation Master Plan and updating the design principles and design standards. Next slide, please. Under the environment section, there are 43 remaining items. These items relate to protecting natural and cultural resources and maintaining a clean environment. Notably, staff completed the first draft of the drainage criteria manual and conducted an internal evaluation of plant preservation and environmentally sensitive land requirements to identify gaps. Although hiring consultants such as a biologist and habitat specialist have been put on hold due to budget constraints, staff will address many of these identified gaps by publishing technical bulletins to utilize the best practices for preservation, health identification, and transplant of saguaros and ironwoods. Other upcoming projects include review of the preservation plan, which will be done this next year. Next slide, please. Lastly, under the development section, there were 31 remaining items. These items support existing and future development areas with respect to land use, transportation, and infrastructure. This year, staff increased efficiency with electronic plan review and interdepartmental coordination. A comprehensive annexation policy was adopted, and progress was made towards a housing survey inventory through the apartment study. The town will continue to gather additional research on housing and work on other projects such as the update to the design principles and standards, as well as exploring opportunities to increase broadband services in the town. Next slide, please. So at almost halfway through the 10-year lifespan of the general plan, there are 24 items recommended for future strategic plans. As previously stated, three more strategic plans will be based off this general plan. The number of items reported to be worked on in the future were reduced almost in half through advancements with the Parks and Recreation Master Plan, the Drainage Criteria Manual, and the first steps towards a housing inventory and several code amendments. The remaining items require more resources, such as staff time, funding, or consultants, and include additional code amendments, completion of the environmentally sensitive lands project, and larger programs or events. Next slide, please. So in conclusion, this update is again a commitment to fulfill promises in the general plan. To date, 92% of the 310 total action items have been completed, maintained, or are in progress. And the remaining items will be completed or evaluated through the general plan's 10-year lifespan, with major actions being prioritized through the three additional strategic plans. This concludes my presentation, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Sims. Council, do you have questions for Ms. Sims?
Yes. Yes, just briefly, this agenda item, if you notice, it says presentation. So no commentary, no speeches, just questions of Ms. Sims only, please. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Council, questions? Vice Mayor Barron.
Thank you. Ms. Sims, I assume that in order to generate this report, you have some kind of a document that itemizes each policy in the general plan and whether it's considered completed, in progress, or a future item. And I was just hoping that perhaps the council could get a copy of that in preparation for upcoming strategic leadership plans so that we can take a look at each of those action items and where they currently stand.
Vice Mayor Barrett, sure. So it is similar to the attachment, but we do have one that has all 310 that we'd be happy to share.
Okay, thank you.
And if I may also add, Mr. Mayor, we will be putting a very robust package together for the council again of lots of background reading in advance of your retreat, and I'll ensure we'll get it to you in advance, but then we'll put it in your background packet.
Yeah, it would be helpful to have that as far in advance as possible. I had a similar question as the vice mayor, because our strategic leadership plan tears off, and that's one of the things that I appreciated. I'll stop with the commentary. I will just say that I would also agree with the vice mayor's comment. I had a similar question. Okay. Any other questions? Okay, seeing none, thank you, Ms. Sims. We appreciate your presentation this evening.
Thank you.
The next item is the consent agenda, and I move to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
Vice Mayor seconds. And Mr. Standish, could you read the consent agenda items, please, before we take a vote?
Sure, Mr. Mayor. Item A, minutes, November 12th and November 18th, 2020. Item B, adoption of the 2021 regular town council meeting schedule. Item C, resolution number R20-56, approving the agenda committee assignment for the period of December 1st, 2020 to February 28th, 2021. Item D, reappointments to any or all of the various boards and commissions, Board of Adjustment, Budget and Finance Commission, Historic Preservation Commission, Parks and Recreation Advisory Board, Planning and Zoning Commission, Stormwater Utility Commission, and Water Utility Commission. Item E, approval of council liaison assignments for 2021. Item F, resolution number R20-57, authorizing and approving a memorandum of understanding with the state of Arizona concerning Arizona opiate litigation settlement. And then the last item, item G, resolution number R20-58, approving the town's legislative agenda protocols guiding the town's priorities for the 2021 legislative session and any lobbying activities.
Here, so I'll have discussion. Councilmember Green, you need to unmute yourself.
The council liaison assignments, where is that located and who's doing what? I don't think I got a copy of that.
Council Member Green, you've been assigned to the Storm Utility Commission, and Council Member Bowen has been assigned to the Water Utilities Commission. And my apologies if you were not notified of that.
Thank you.
And all other liaison assignments remain the same.
Thank you.
Any other discussion? Hearing none, Mr. Standish, if we could do a roll call vote, please.
Vice Mayor Barrett?
Yes.
Councilmember Bowen?
Yes.
Councilmember Green?
Yes.
Councilmember Jones-Ivy? Councilmember Nicholson?
Yes.
Councilmember Solomon?
Yes.
And Mayor Winfield?
Yes. Council or consent agenda is approved 6-0. Thank you. We'll go to the regular agenda. Agenda item one, Mr. Standish.
Nomination and election of vice mayor.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to open the floor to nominations, and I'd like to nominate Melanie Barrett to serve as vice mayor.
A second.
Councilmember Green?
Would you mind refreshing our memory on the duties of the vice chairman or the vice mayor?
Yeah, the duties are largely to serve as a substitute when the mayor is not present. So, for example, if I were not able to participate in a town council meeting, the vice mayor would lead the meeting as I typically do. If there are events that I would be invited to attend and perhaps speak, and if I weren't available, then the vice mayor would go in my absence. So that's largely the duties of the vice mayor. And I have 100% attendance record, Councilmember Green, so.
Thank you.
Yeah. But I've appreciated the vice mayor's certain willingness and incredibly effective council member, as all of you. Hearing no other nominations, I move to elect Melanie Barrett as vice mayor.
Second.
I heard a second from Councilmember Bowen. So Nicholson. Any discussion? Mr. Standish, roll call vote, please.
Vice Mayor Barrett?
Yes.
Councilmember Bowen?
Yes.
Councilmember Green?
You're on mute, Councilmember Green.
Yes.
Thank you. Councilmember Jones-Ivy? Councilmember Nicholson?
Yes.
Thank you. Councilmember Solomon?
No.
And Mayor Winfield?
Yes. Motion passes 5-1. We'll go to agenda item 2. Mr. Standish.
Public hearing, discussion of possible action regarding an application for a Series 7 beer and wine bar liquor license for Fire Truck Brewing Company located at 9630 North Oracle Road.
Okay, staff report, is that from you, Mr. Standish?
Yes, sir, Mr. Mayor. So as I stated before, we received an application for the Series 7 liquor license submitted by Agent Kevin Arnold Kramer for the Fire Truck Brewing Company, located at 9630 North Oracle Road. Mr. Kramer has submitted all the necessary paperwork to the town and to the Arizona Department of Liquor Licenses and Control, and he has paid all the related fees associated with applying for the liquor license. In accordance with the Arizona Revised Statutes, the application was posted for the 20 days on the premises and ending on November 12th, and no protests were received during that time period. The police department has completed their standard background check on Fire Truck Brewing Company and Agent Kevin Arnold Kramer, and the Oro Valley Police Department has no objection to the approval of the Series 7 liquor license. And one last thing, I know on the last agenda we had just 2 weeks ago, we had the same company on their business at the same location, and on that agenda they applied for a Series 12 license, which again is a completely separate application process from this application process. It was received at different times, so we weren't able to get them on the same agenda, but this is for a Series 7 license, which is different from that previous version. And with that concludes my presentation. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Thank you for clarifying that. I'm going to open a public hearing for this item at this time. So anyone that's wanting to speak on agenda item number 2, this would be your opportunity to speak. So if you could please indicate by raising your hand or clicking *9 on your phone. And just as an update, we have 40 attendees, 17 panelists, for a total of 57 participating at this stage of our meeting. Okay, Michael, if we could unmute Michael's microphone, staff.
Hello?
Yes, you've been unmuted. If you could state your name and whether you're a resident of Oro Valley.
My name is Michael Thies. I am a resident. I could not figure out how to lower my hand. I was just playing around, so I do not have a question.
Okay. So if there's anyone that would like to speak to this agenda item 2, we're in a public hearing for the application for a Series 7 liquor license for Fire Truck Brewing Company located at 9630 North Oracle Road. If you'd like to speak to this topic, this is your opportunity to do so. And we will forgive you if you accidentally raise your hand. Okay, seeing none, and I didn't have any advanced next request for this item. I'll close the public hearing and entertain a motion from council.
I move approval.
Okay.
Second.
I think Mr. Standish, Councilmember Green.
I move approval, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, so there's a specific suggested motion, and that's in your packet. You mind if I go ahead and read that?
Yes, I would move that, sir.
I move to recommend approval of the issuance of a Series 7 liquor license to the Arizona Department of Liquor Licenses and Control for Kevin Arnold Cranberg for Fire Trek Brewing Company, located at 9630 North Oracle Road. Would you like to second that, Councilmember Green?
I would second it.
Is that fine, Mr. Cohen?
I think our record's clear. I appreciate what you're doing. I think we're good. Thank you.
Okay. Any discussion? All right, Mr. Standish, if we could take a roll call vote.
Yes, Mayor Barrett?
Yes.
Councilmember Bowen?
Yes.
Councilmember Green?
Yes.
Councilmember Jones-Ivy? Councilmember Nicholson?
Yes.
Councilmember Solomon?
Yes.
And Mayor Winfield?
Yes. Regular item 2 passes 6-0. Mr. Standish, regular agenda item 3.
Item 3A, resolution number R20-59, type 1 general plan amendment to change 2 Kai Capri special area policies to allow R6 multifamily residential district zoning uses on a vacant commercial parcel. And also item 3B, public hearing, ordinance number O20-11, rezoning to change the zoning designation of a vacant parcel from C1 commercial to R6 multifamily residential.
So this is a two-part item. We need to address item A before moving to item B. I move to adopt resolution number R20-59, approving the type 1 general plan amendment to change 2 Kai Capri special area policies to allow R-6 multifamily residential zoning uses on the subject parcel located southeast of the First Avenue and Tangerine Road intersection, based on the finding that the request complies with the amendment criteria and the general plan.
I'll second.
Okay, Councilmember Solomon seconds. Any discussion?
Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
May I have Mr. Vella weigh in? I think we may have jumped on the wrong item. Mr. Vella, would you jump in?
Did I read the wrong?
If I may, Mayor, suggest that motions for A and B wait till after one collective public hearing on both items.
Okay.
So staff is prepared to present on both items and then public hearings and followed by motions.
Thank you. I misunderstood. Thanks.
No worries.
Okay, Ms. Oden.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
Point of order, do you need to withdraw the motion and do I need to withdraw the second? Or
I'll
is a question for our attorney?
Mr. Cohen?
I think that makes it's not necessary, but that would be cleaner.
Okay, I withdraw the motion.
I withdraw my second.
Okay.
Thank you, Councilmember Solomon. I appreciate that. Thank
We're
you.
Clean. It's like it never happened. It feels so good.
I can do that with a whole bunch of other things.
All right, Ms. Oden.
All right, good evening, Mr. Mayor and Town Council. Can you hear me all right?
Yes.
Great, thank you. Good evening, my name is Hannah Oden, and I'm a senior planner with the Town of Oro Valley. Okay, next slide, please. So the purpose of this case is to consider 2 separate requests. The first is for a Type 1 general plan amendment, and the second is for a rezoning request to allow multifamily residential uses on a vacant commercial parcel located near the southeast corner of the First Avenue and Tangerine Road intersection. By state law, all Type 1 general plan amendments must be considered by Town Council in the same calendar year they are submitted. The public hearing tonight will satisfy the state-mandated requirement. So tonight, I will provide information about the applicant's request and walk you through their proposal, and the applicant is also here tonight to provide additional details. All general plan amendment and rezoning requests require a recommendation by the Planning and Zoning Commission with final approval by Town Council. These requests have been considered at two public hearings by the Planning and Zoning Commission, and last month, the Commission voted to recommend approval of the general plan amendment request and conditional approval of the rezoning request for apartments and rental casitas only. Tonight, this case is presented to the Council for discussion and possible action. Okay, next slide, please. So to orient ourselves, the subject parcel is located near the southeast corner of the First Avenue and Tangerine Road intersection and is outlined in yellow on this slide. It is 13.4 acres, commercially zoned and vacant. So immediately to the south and east is the Villages at Silverhawk residential subdivision, and the Catalina Shadows neighborhood is located farther to the east. To the south is Palisades Road and the Palisades Splits residential area. To the west, across First Avenue, is the Tangerine Hills neighborhood, and the Oro Valley Retail Center with the Walgreens is located farther to the north. And across Tangerine Road, also to the north, is the Safeway Vistosa Plaza. The subject property would be served by the future Kai Drive, as shown on this slide. I also want to mention that there is a similar vacant commercially zoned property located immediately west across Kai Drive, and Pima County owns the land immediately north of the subject parcel. Okay, next slide, please. So the applicant is requesting to amend the general plan and rezone the subject property from C1 commercial to R6 multifamily residential to allow the uses shown on this slide. The applicant is proposing five options, which are apartments, rental casitas, townhomes, senior care, and single family residential uses. I will discuss these concepts in a little more detail in my presentation. And again, the applicant will also be able to describe the concepts in detail. Okay, next slide, please. So overall, this proposal has several community benefits. So first, there will be minimal to no view impacts from Tangerine Road and First Avenue and adjacent neighborhoods due to topography and the distance of the subject parcel from these areas. The proposed height is also the same as the homes in the adjacent Villages at Silverhawk residential development, which is 25 feet. So compared to the existing commercial zoning, the proposed land use will provide a more graduated transition from the existing single family residential homes to other nearby commercial uses. This fact, coupled with the low building heights, helps ensure that the proposal is compatible with the existing subdivisions in the area and homes currently under construction. Another important focus of this proposal is how each proposed use will support nearby commercial areas. The apartments and rental casitas will have the greatest economic benefit as they will provide more households and help secure the overall viability of this commercial intersection. It is also important to note that currently there is not enough residential density to support commercial use on the subject parcel, and it suffers from poor visibility for major roadways. Next, a traffic impact statement has been submitted by the applicant and thoroughly reviewed by staff for safety and any potential impacts. Mitigation measures will be implemented when warranted at the cost to the developer to accommodate the proposed development. So lastly, as part of a previous rezoning in 2015 for the entire Villages at Silverhawk area, which included the subject parcel, 86 acres or about 58% of the entire area was preserved as environmentally sensitive open space. Okay, next slide, please. So next, I want to spend some time providing some background information and history of the parcel regarding the general plan and associated special area policies. So the parcel is located within a tier two growth area, which is identified in the general plan. Tier two growth areas are neighborhood focused commercial areas supported by a variety of residential uses. These areas are intended to serve the immediate needs of residents while limiting impact. The parcel was identified in the 2005 General Plan Land Use Map as neighborhood commercial office and was reaffirmed by voters in 2016. This land use designation targets commercial and office areas close to major roadways and is intended to serve nearby residential neighborhoods. Residential uses may also be included in neighborhood commercial office areas on a case-by-case basis. The general plan also has a number of areas identified that are subject to special area policies, and these are customized planning elements for the site. So the subject parcel, which is outlined in yellow on this slide, is within an area known as Kai Capri, which is outlined in blue. The special area policies limit the number of residential units to 255. The special area policies also restrict commercial and residential uses in certain areas, have height and view preservation restrictions, and include policies for environmental protections, especially including riparian areas. Okay, next slide, please. So in 2015, the subject property was rezoned from large lot residential, so R1-144 zoning, to C1 commercial as part of an overall rezoning for the entire area north of Palisades Road, shown on this slide. The area to the south and east, which is the villages at Silverhawk Residential Subdivision, was included in the rezoning, but is still zoned for single family homes. The image on this slide shows the extent of the rezoned area with the subject parcel outlined in yellow. C1 commercial zoning permits uses such as offices, retail, and restaurants. As part of the rezoning, a site plan, which is known as a tentative development plan, or TDP, was approved for the subject parcel, which is the image shown on this slide. I'll discuss this in more detail in the following slide, but this limited the building height to no higher than 25 feet. The 2015 rezoning also conserved approximately 58% of the entire rezoned area as natural open space. The extent of open space preservation went well beyond any of the residential subdivisions in this area, and as part of the rezoning, there was also an extensive public outreach process. Okay, next slide, please. So this slide shows a closer look at the commercial portion of the tentative development plan that was approved for the site as part of the 2015 rezoning. As mentioned previously, the site layout shows office and commercial uses with parking and landscaped areas and approximately 86,000 square feet of building space. Under the existing zoning, this is what could be developed on the site today and could include uses such as retail, offices, grocery stores, and restaurants, just to name a few. The existing allowed height is 25 feet, and this will remain the same. Okay, next slide, please. So now that I've covered the background and history of the parcel, I'll begin getting into the specifics of the applicant's request, and we'll start with the general plan amendment. The property is designated as neighborhood commercial office under the general plan land use map shown on this slide. The applicant is not proposing a change to the land use designation of the parcel from neighborhood commercial office, so that land use will be retained. The applicant is instead proposing a text amendment to the general plan to change two Kai Capri special area policies, which is considered a type 1 major general plan amendment. The first change is to increase the number of maximum residential units. As mentioned previously, as currently mapped, the number of residential dwelling units is 255. The applicant is proposing a new maximum of 394 residential units for the Kai Capri area to accommodate their proposal. Second, the applicant is proposing changing a special area policy to allow R6 multifamily residential uses on the subject parcel. As written, the neighborhood commercial office areas must be used for commercial or office uses only and do not permit residential development. The proposed text amendment would allow multifamily residential uses on the subject parcel consistent with R6 zoning on just a portion of the neighborhood commercial office area. The special area policies also specify that any increase in overall density from one dwelling unit per acre or a change in commercial area to residential must be treated as a type 1 major general plan amendment. And again, this is the process the application has been subject to. Okay, next slide, please. So before I continue with the proposed general plan amendment, I want to provide a little context regarding the town's existing general plan. The Your Voice, Our Future general plan is a voter-approved policy document that drives town actions and reflects community values. It includes a vision, guiding principles, and goals and policies that guide town decisions and development. The general plan includes a land use map, which shows the proposed general uses of land in Oro Valley. The general plan, including the land use map, was ratified by voters in 2016. Property owners have the right to request a land use change to their private property, known as a general plan amendment. The general plan acknowledges that these changes will happen and specifically states that changes will occur during the life of the plan, as shown on this slide, and is accompanied by an intensive public outreach process. General plan amendments can include both a revision to the land use map or a text amendment to the plan. All general plan amendments are reviewed for conformance with the vision, guiding principles, and goals and policies of the general plan. Staff also thoroughly reviews how neighbor concerns have been addressed by the applicant as part of their proposal, and that the proposal contributes to the long-term economic stability of the town. I'll discuss the amendment criteria in more detail in the following slides. Okay, next slide, please. So the general plan outlines three specific amendment criteria that all proposed general plan amendments are evaluated by and must satisfy. General plan amendment criteria provide a tool for the town to judge the merits of a specific amendment request. Now I'll go through the first and third amendment criteria in the following slides, and we'll cover the second further in the presentation when I discuss the public participation process. The applicant's complete responses to the amendment criteria can be found in attachment 3 of your packets. So the first criteria is if on balance, the request is consistent with the vision, guiding principles, and goals and policies of the general plan. The applicant is proposing a variety of diverse housing types, including apartments and casitas, that will meet the need of Oro Valley residents and is supported by the general plan. The general plan also calls for a diversified and robust economic base to support long-term economic stability. An increased residential density in the area provided by the apartment and rental casita concepts will support the long-term economic stability of the town by providing the residential population needed to support the surrounding commercial areas. I will discuss this in more detail in the following slide. Next, the general plan amendment shall not significantly alter the existing development character or land use patterns without adequate buffers and graduated transitions in land use and density. The proposal provides an appropriate graduated land use transition from the neighboring single-family residential homes to the adjacent vacant commercial parcel directly on the southeast corner of First Avenue and Tangerine Road with appropriate buffer yards. If approved, the architecture will also be reviewed for compatibility with surrounding development. The general plan amendment may not impact existing uses with increased infrastructure without improvements to accommodate for growth. Proposed infrastructure and improvements are able to accommodate for the proposed growth. The parcel will be served by Oro Valley Water Utility, and there is ample sewer capacity. The completion of Kai Drive to Tangerine Road will accommodate future traffic and has been carefully analyzed by town staff as part of a traffic impact statement submitted by the applicant. The cost of all necessary infrastructure will be borne by the developer, including utilities. The proposed general plan amendment must also not impact public services. The proposal will not adversely impact these services. Amphi School District has capacity for the proposed development. Recreation areas will be provided on site. No major drainage issues exist. And the Oro Valley Police Department and Golden Ranch Fire has reviewed the proposal. Lastly, the general plan amendment request may not impact the natural beauty and environmental resources without suitable mitigation. As part of the master plan from the approved 2015 rezoning, which again included the subject parcel, approximately 58% of the area, or 86 acres, were conserved as environmentally sensitive open space. The proposed development must also conform to all applicable zoning provisions related to native plant mitigation, landscape design, and environmental conservation. As mentioned previously, view impacts would be minimal to non-existent due to the distance from major roadways, adjacent subdivisions, and identical building heights allowed for the adjacent homes that are currently under construction. Okay, next slide, please. The Third Amendment criteria relates to how the proposal supports the economic stability of the town. While this proposal is for a residential development, this criteria is still relevant as a critical component of this request is how each of the proposed uses will support surrounding commercial development. The First and Tangerine intersection is part of what is considered a local serving commercial center. At one time, it may have been considered and planned for as more of a regional commercial center. However, the surrounding area, particularly Rancho Vistoso, did not develop to the anticipated residential density or expected traffic volume to support the amount of commercially zoned land at that intersection. So there's simply too much commercially zoned land at the intersection than what can reasonably be supported by the surrounding residential density. The result has been that approximately 70% of the area has remained vacant. So there are key vacant commercial parcels at this intersection, including the subject parcel that are appropriate to convert to higher density residential uses that are made to be compatible with the nearby area. Conversion of these parcels to residential uses would support the viability of the commercial center. Furthermore, increased residential density is key to making commercial uses at this intersection work and allowing vacant commercial parcels to develop. Okay, next slide, please. So as mentioned previously, the subject intersection is a local serving commercial center. Staff has chosen to compare the First and Tangerine intersection with another local serving commercial center, which is the area at the intersection of Lambert and La Cañada. So both are shown on yellow in this slide. Each draws customers from the immediate areas and includes similar tenant types. Please note the La Cañada and Lambert Lane intersection, which is again a local commercial area, is about 46 acres smaller than the First and Tangerine intersection. So even though the First and Tangerine intersection is considered a local serving commercial center, it is actually larger than the regional commercial center located at Oracle Road and First Avenue, and comparable to the Oro Valley Marketplace in size. The subject intersection has more commercially zoned land than what is reasonable to develop compared to nearby regional commercial areas that see more traffic. The proximity to the commercial centers along Oracle Road is also a challenge, as this creates more competition without the necessary surrounding residential density to support all of these areas. Reducing the amount of commercially zoned land to residential to more closely resemble the local commercial center at Lambert Lane and La Cañada Drive is justifiable and reasonable to make the First Avenue and Tangerine Road intersection a viable commercial area. Okay, next slide, please. So this slide shows a comparison of the subject intersection in relation to the commercial center at Lambert and La Cañada regarding key factors that are critical in supporting commercial areas. So these are density, household income, demographic factors such as age, and traffic. These components are foundational to determine the health of a commercial center. Site selectors, business owners, and financiers that provide the capital routinely utilize these factors when determining where to locate a business. As you can see in the table, the two commercial centers are similar in terms of income, median household age, and traffic volume. However, the Lambert and La Cañada intersection has more businesses and a higher density of both population and households within a 1.5 mile radius than the subject intersection at First and Tangerine. This is especially problematic for commercial viability when considering again, that the First and Tangerine intersection is over twice the size of the Lambert and La Cañada intersection with a significant amount of vacant commercially zoned land. There simply isn't the surrounding residential density to support the existing amount of commercial uses at this intersection. These factors are detrimental when site selectors, business owners, and financiers are looking for areas to locate a business and is the main reason that about 70% of the commercially zoned land at this intersection has remained vacant. So as I move on, I want you to keep in mind the population deficit of over 2,300 residents at the First and Tangerine intersection and the excessive amount of commercially zoned land. In the next slide, I want to focus on the ways to bridge this gap to achieve greater parity with the intersection at Lambert and La Cañada. There are three key properties to work with that can help do this. Okay, next slide, please. So this slide shows an aerial with the subject parcel outlined in yellow. Surrounding vacant commercial parcels are outlined in red. Currently, approximately 77 acres of commercially zoned land exist at this intersection, and approximately 53 acres, so about 70% of the site are vacant. For these commercial sites to be successful, more residential density is needed. So from the start, staff has supported the densest rezoning options in an effort to achieve more parity with the surrounding residential density seen at the Lambert and La Cañada intersection. The lower density rezoning development concepts would not provide nearly the same amount of economic benefit. Allowing R6 uses on the subject parcel in conjunction with the completion of villages at Silverhawk would be a first step to provide important density needed to support existing and future commercial development at this intersection by providing more customers. As mentioned previously, there are three key parcels that are important to achieve greater population and household density parity with the intersection at Lambert and La Cañada. Staff anticipates that the three parcels marked with a star on this slide, which includes the subject parcel, will request conversion to residential uses as there is not enough surrounding residential density to currently support commercial uses on those parcels. Height-restricted multifamily residential development on these parcels could provide the additional residential density needed to support commercial uses at the intersection and achieve greater parity with the Lambert and La Cañada intersection. Conversion of these three parcels to residential would result in the commercially zoned land to be reduced to 41 acres compared to 77 acres. So that's much closer to the 31 acres that we see at Lambert and La Cañada. Okay, next slide, please. So this slide compares the number of potential customers for the apartment and casita concepts, which are the densest options, and the single family residential concept, which is the least dense option. The apartment concept provides 236 potential new customers compared to the single family residential concept. More dwelling units translates to more customers and is a critical draw for new businesses. Based on extensive literature review and interviews with commercial brokers, staff has concluded that the site selection process does not distinguish between renters and homeowners and that the spending habits are very similar. So while a homeowner may make a larger purchase for a home such as a dishwasher or dryer, the same purchase would still be made for an apartment unit just by the apartment owner rather than the tenant. For convenience, these purchases are often made at the closest store, so would therefore still support nearby commercial businesses. The image on this slide shows the types of businesses located at the First and Tangerine intersection. All of these would benefit from nearby residential density that consisted of renters rather than homeowners. Okay, next slide, please. So now that I've discussed the proposed general plan amendment, I'll move on to the second part of the applicant's request, which is the proposed rezoning. The property is currently zoned as C1 commercial. This zoning permits commercial uses such as retail, professional offices, restaurants, and drug stores, as shown on the table in this slide. This zoning provides for large-scale office uses and medium-sized retail centers and is generally located along major arterial roadways. The applicant is proposing to rezone the property to R6 multifamily residential. In addition to apartments and other home types, this zoning also allows for professional offices on a residential scale that support employment opportunities. So this includes tech park uses such as research and development offices. The applicant, again, is proposing apartments, casitas, and townhomes, as well as senior care and single-family residential uses. The existing C1 commercial zoning does not permit these residential uses, which is why the applicant is proposing the change. Okay, next slide, please. So as part of any proposed rezoning, the applicant is required to submit a tentative development plan, or TDP. And this is for the design they are held to should the rezoning application be approved, and it is reviewed for code compliance by town staff. In this case, the applicant is proposing the five tentative development plans shown on this slide, which again are apartments, rental casitas, townhomes, senior care, and single family residential uses. So while the design of all these options are different, they have been reviewed for code compliance and have some common elements. So all proposed options will have a single access off Kai Drive with internal sidewalk and pedestrian connections linking to the future sidewalk along Kai Drive, which will extend north to Tangerine. A public trail easement to connect to Kai Drive from Villages Phase 3 will be provided either on the subject parcel or on the adjacent Pima County land at the northern property boundary. Depending on the development scenario, anywhere between 10 to 35% of the site will be retained as open space. 15-foot minimum buffer yards will be provided adjacent to future homes on the south and east property boundaries. The applicant is proposing supplementing buffer yard vegetation with landscaping at the adjacent Villages at Silverhawk subdivision, which is permitted by code. The applicant is also proposing a maximum of 167 units, which is the maximum density for this parcel permitted by R6 zoning. There will also be a 25-foot height limit, which is the same as the existing C1 height and the height allowed for the adjacent single-family residential homes. Also, code-compliant recreation areas are provided on-site for each of the concepts. So due to a lack of both density and economic benefit, the Planning and Zoning Commission has recommended a condition of approval that the townhome, senior care, and single-family residential concepts be removed from the rezoning application and that only the apartment and rental casita options be considered. This would not eliminate the townhome, senior care, or single-family residential uses on the parcel, as they are still allowed per R6 zoning, but it would require reconsideration of another tentative development plan by town council should those uses ever be proposed on the parcel in the future. Okay, next slide, please. So an extensive public outreach process was used for this proposal that satisfies the second general plan amendment criteria. Due to the unique challenges presented by the COVID-19 pandemic, two informational videos were posted in April to provide information about the project, solicit feedback and questions, and address the questions and concerns that were raised. In May, August, and September, three online, fully interactive Zoom neighborhood meetings were conducted. As part of these meetings, a number of key concerns were raised and include the following, which are shown on the slide. So it included compatibility of the proposed development with the surrounding area, especially concerning view impacts, concerns over traffic safety, pedestrian safety, and light pollution, concerns over the potential negative impacts to property values, as well as the economic benefit of each of the proposal for the surrounding commercial area. So staff and the Planning and Zoning Commission have reviewed the applicant's proposal for how these have been addressed and finds that the applicant has adequately addressed these concerns at follow-up neighborhood meetings and in their application. Again, they are here tonight to discuss these topics in more detail as needed. And I want to emphasize again that view impacts will be minimal from First Avenue, Tangerine Road, and Villages at Silverhawk residences. The image on this slide shows a two-story home at the Villages at Silverhawk subdivision, which is approximately 25 feet. This is the same maximum height that would be allowed as part of the proposed development. Okay, next slide, please. So with any general plan amendment application and rezoning, the applicant must establish conformance with the goals and policies of the general plan. This application conforms to the general plan by providing a diverse range of housing types, supporting nearby commercial areas, particularly with the apartment and rental casita options, providing an appropriate transition between the adjacent single-family residential development and neighborhood and neighboring commercial areas, and providing a public trail connection to Kai Drive as part of the development. As discussed in detail earlier in this presentation, the proposed general plan amendment meets all amendment criteria. The proposal is also reviewed for compliance with the zoning code, and all tentative development plans comply with the R6 zoning standards, which includes height, setbacks, and buffer yards. Okay, next slide, please. So the Planning and Zoning Commission considered this application at a public hearing on October 13th and November 10th. After considering the application, the Planning and Zoning Commission found that the proposal was compatible with adjacent land uses and that increasing residential density at the intersection is critical to supporting surrounding commercial areas by providing more customers with the densest options, which are the apartment and rental casita concepts. The commission recognized that these two concepts would have the greatest economic benefit to the intersection. At the conclusion of the November 10th meeting, the commission recommended approval of both the general plan amendment and rezoning requests, subject to the rezoning conditions in the ordinance attachment of your packet. This includes approval of the apartment and rental casita options only. The commission recommendation, by including only the apartment and rental casita options, ensures the greatest amount of customers and therefore the most economic benefit for the intersection. This is a critical piece to ensure viability for this commercial intersection. Okay, next slide, please. So in summary, if approved, the proposed application would result in a multifamily residential development with minimal to no view impacts from First Avenue, Tangerine Road, and adjacent homes, and would be the same height permitted for adjacent single-family residences. It would provide an appropriate and more graduated land use transition between existing residential areas and future commercial development than what is allowed under the existing zoning. The apartment and rental casita options would provide the residential density to help support surrounding vacant commercial parcels, help them to develop. As discussed, the economic benefit is greatest for the apartment and rental casita options, as there is too much commercial acreage and not enough surrounding residential density to support a local commercial center at that area. Again, the subject intersection has a significant population deficit compared to the local commercial center at the Lambert and La Cunada intersection. A traffic impact statement has been thoroughly analyzed by staff, and suitable mitigation measures will be implemented when warranted to accommodate any traffic impacts at the cost of the developer. The Planning and Zoning Commission recommends approval of item A, which is the general plan amendment request, and conditional approval of item B, which is the rezoning request, subject to the conditions of approval found in the ordinance attachment of your packets. This attachment includes several conditions, but notably, the Planning and Zoning Commission recommends that only the apartment and rental casita options be considered as part of the rezoning application. A condition is also included dedicating a cultural resource area to the town to carry forward a condition of approval from the adjacent villages at Silverhawk Phase 3. Again, this case is being presented tonight for discussion and possible action. Please note that separate motions are required for each item and that action to approve item A is required in order to make a motion on item B. So this concludes my presentation, and the applicant is also here tonight to present additional details about the proposals. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Oden. So we have a presentation by the applicant, is that correct?
Mr. Mayor, Mr. Olin has his hand up in the attendees section. I don't know if he needs to be unmuted by staff.
Okay.
Mr. Mayor, Mr. Kai is also on the line.
Okay.
I'm sure he can unmute himself to speak.
All right. So staff, if we could unmute Mr. Olin and Mr. Kai. And will Mr. Olin be making a presentation?
Mr. Mayor, I have a presentation to.
Okay.
Mr. Mayor, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mr. Mayor, Council, thank you so much. I just wanted to do a quick introduction of myself before I hand over the presentation to Mr. Oland. I just wanted to give a quick intro on our involvement with this property and our family's involvement with the town. It's been a pleasure kind of working with this Silverhawk project and actively involved since 2015 with the work on the villages as well as sanctuary. So quick background, our family's been involved in Pima County specifically and in Oro Valley for over three generations. My grandparents immigrated to the U.S. And started from pretty humble beginnings in the agricultural community to the west of Oro Valley. I won't name any names, but through a lot of hard work and grit, they were fortunate to be able to purchase this property in the 50s when it was originally part of Pima County. With this project, in addition to others, we're actively involved in Oro Valley with other residential and commercial developments. We pride ourselves on our developments, so much so that I live in one of the completed residential projects. We have a unique perspective, I think, because of the different development types we work on and are fortunate to be involved and honored to be part of the community. Ms. Oden did a great job on the presentation and mentioning the Silverhawk project. It was a joint development with Meritage Homes. Our family's been proud of how that came together regarding its open space, multi-use path, and quick acceptance by new homeowners to the town of Oro Valley. That development process, as I mentioned, began in 2015, which included numerous meetings with the neighbors, town staff, and the council at that time. We feel like that project is a cohesive and beneficial addition to the town of Oro Valley. In this current proposal, which is kind of the finishing stages of Silverhawk, our family's been actively involved. Mr. Oland's staff, and including the consideration of the viability of the existing C1 retail use, consideration of the housing transition, traffic connectivity, as well as taking into consideration the neighborhood impacts and keeping our height limitation as well. Had the opportunity to speak to numerous people within the community, neighbors, different businesses, and through those discussions, we received positive feedback regarding the benefits of this project to support existing businesses. Mr. Mayor and council members, included in your packet, you'll see letters of support from the community, varying from neighbor, restaurant purveyors, shopping center owner, and a major employer of the Oro Valley Hospital. I appreciate your opportunity for me to give my introduction and share a little bit about ourselves. We're not always up there, as Mr. Oland's our applicant typically, and sharing that, but I appreciate this opportunity and will proceed with letting Mr. Oland move forward with that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Kai.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. If it's all right, I'll proceed with my few slides.
Please do.
Thank you, sir. My name is Paul Oland. I'm with Paradigm Land Design, representing the property owner. I have been involved in the Kai Capri project for many years and have seen it through all of its development phases. As Ms. Oden mentioned, 15 years ago, there were a bunch of special area policies that were put onto this property in the general plan that guided the development that has since happened. It guided the rezoning. That was 5 years ago. It has guided the plats and it guided the existing commercial zoning that's on there right now. So this is an overall map of that Capri property. What I want to point out, I won't belabor the point, is just how much open space there is. Ms. Oden mentioned 58%. That's just the area north of Palisades. The entire area south of Palisades had an even higher open space percentage. So all told, there's been a lot of open space dedicated throughout here. Also on this map, last thing I want to point out is just the trail system. This is a map that I put together a number of years ago when we first started master planning it before the zoning effort. And one of the things that we included was a trail system because we recognized that was something that was needed to fulfill some of the general plan policies in terms of connectivity, but it also would be a nice amenity for our residents. So the little white and yellowish dash lines that are on there are the trails that were planned many years ago. And so far, all of the areas that have undergone development have included dedication of public trail easements along those alignments. And that included quite a bit of work to establish an equestrian connection from north all the way to south, because there are a few equestrian users that use this property to get from the CDO up to Big Wash. It also included the Palisades Path, which is also on this map. That was a big effort as well, and I know it is well used today. So this is what we're talking about here is one of the last bits in that overall trail system plan that will come to fruition. Next slide, please. Thank you. This is a newer aerial. Obviously, it shows some of the development that's occurred. You can see the Meritage Sanctuary at Silverhawk down south, and then the three phases of the villages on the north there, subject properties in pink. Ms. Oden mentioned the other commercial property that we retain, and that's in the darker red there right on the corner. We believe, as Ms. Oden alluded to, that one day that still will hopefully be viable as a thriving commercial use. There is a decent sized lush running along the edge of it there. So not quite all of that is developable acreage, but it's a good piece. And we believe that this parcel in particular, if allowed to develop residentially, it will certainly help that darker red commercial piece become more viable. The subject property just is not what anybody envisioned it to be in terms of commercial. When the general plan applied those uses 15 years ago or so, at that point there was a lot of undeveloped land in the area, in Rancho Vistoso, of course, all of this property, and there were a number of other properties in the vicinity that had not yet been developed. And even as recently as 5 years ago, when we actually established the zoning per the general plan, which included the subject parcel, there were still a number of acres of undeveloped residential land in the vicinity within a couple of miles. Since then, almost all that land has been developed, and it has been developed at densities that are pretty typical for Oro Valley. They're suburban, 2 to 2.5 homes per acre typically. This is actually the Kai Capri property here because of the amount of open space, which is driven in part by some of the natural constraints. It's actually lower density than a lot of other areas, but at any rate, that density did not, the potential density around here did not materialize. So that's really why we're here today, asking for this downzoning to go from the commercial use down to a higher density residential. Next slide, please. Thank you. So I won't belabor this point, Ms. Oden. Spoke extensively on it, but needless to say, there are a number of businesses here struggling. There's a lot of undeveloped land that is not going to be viable simply because there's not enough homes around here. The little map on the right is similar to one that Ms. Oden had, but it also includes the Bash's shopping center up there at Rancho Vistosa Boulevard and Oracle. That was another regional one that has gone through some hard times, and that's partially because of a lack of density. It's partially because the whole brick and mortar retail world has been turned upside down by Amazon and direct sales and things like that. But we are where we are, and this property that we're talking about certainly would be better utilized in a non-commercial way. Next slide, please. So we had a economic impact study done to help us understand what we were proposing a little better in terms of their potential benefits. It also provided some input to staff, and hopefully this information is useful to you all as well. But it was done by Valbridge, which is a well-respected economic firm here in town that works for public and private sector, taking a look at this sort of thing, helping land use decisions, helping purchase decisions, sale decisions, things like that. So one of the things that they looked at first was just to confirm our assessment that the retail zoning is not particularly viable on this piece, and they confirmed that as we suspected they would. Poor visibility from Tangerine, which we'll get into. It's actually physically distant from the intersection, and even with good visibility, that in itself would be a hindrance to its commercial success potential. It's also this property is well positioned for a more transitional land use. And of course, insufficient population makes this a tough site. So next slide, please. Real quick, I'll just touch on the access here. When the property was rezoned in 2015, it included a single point of access off of First Avenue. It did not loop up into Tangerine Road as we've shown now. That at the time was analyzed and acknowledged that it was tight, but it would work. But the downside is that all of the traffic from Villages Phase 3, which is south of us, this parcel, Block 4, which is the red commercial parcel to our west, and then portion of Villages 2 south of that, would all really funnel out onto First Avenue, and that would have been quite an impact. So a number of years ago, as we were working through the platting on the residential portions, we took another look at that, got together with the traffic engineers, and determined that looping up to Tangerine would actually work a lot better. It would split some of the flows. It would provide, it would allow people on Tangerine, drivers on Tangerine, to access down into this parcel, all of Silverhawk here, the residential and the commercial, without having to go over to First and loop down through that. So it'll actually reduce the amount of congestion that could be at Tangerine and First. This is how it was block platted. So this alignment is already partially built. It's built up to the second stub out that you see on the screen, just at the southwest corner of this property that was built as part of Villages Phases 2 and 3. And this parcel here, when this develops, will complete the loop up to Tangerine. Small note in terms of the connection point to Tangerine, I know there was some concern about that. What we're proposing is basically a three-part movement, right in, right out, left in, but no left out. Left out does propose the or caused the greatest potential for conflict in terms of traffic movement. We're also looking at preliminarily the need for acceleration lanes or deceleration lanes on Tangerine, and we'll be working closely with town staff to make sure that if those are needed, they're installed. That's it for that slide. Please, next slide. I mentioned the traffic report. There have been several iterations as the development has rolled along the different phases of Silverhawk. The traffic impact statement was updated again as part of this project to help us understand and help town staff understand whether a higher density residential use would have an equal, greater, or lesser impact than what was already approved and anticipated in the previous version of the study. And you can see here what it found is that it moves around a little bit, slightly higher overall, but it's actually spread out the traffic volume. So the findings of the original TIA are expected to remain the same. And also, of course, we started out this application proposing the five different land use scenarios, including senior care and single family, and then some of the other residential options. And you know, the less dense versions of those would provide or create less traffic. Next slide, please. Thank you. So this slide is our apartment concept that you've seen already in Ms. Oden's presentation. Two stories again. And this really helps fulfill one of the general plan's goals, and that is to provide a full spectrum of housing options, which we'll get to later on in the presentation as well. But it would be gated, highly amenitized, rec area, landscaping, trail connection up to the trail system that I mentioned before. really no negative impact associated with this. Same height as what is currently allowed and what is going to be built around it. A question came up at some point in one of the hearings or meetings that about the property tax and state shared revenue that would be expected from a development like this. So the estimate based on the calculations is that this project would result in a state shared revenue of approximately $135,000 a year, and then the annual property tax would be about $242,000. Next slide, please. Thank you. Also in the Valbridge study, they took a look at this multifamily options here and not a lot of weaknesses. The only weakness they noted was that it's not currently allowed by zoning, which is, of course, not a real market weakness. The opportunities are that it does attract younger people, younger families. And the thing about apartments in Oro Valley that we found is that the rents are strong enough, the property values are strong enough, the employers are strong enough that a lot of renters in Oro Valley are there by choice. These are people who could afford to purchase a home, and they are electing to rent for whatever reason, whether it's a stage of life or employment or simply not wanting the upkeep, not knowing how the mortgage market's going to go and home prices and everything like that. This is a choice that more and more people are making, especially in Tucson and Phoenix, all around Arizona. There's a lot of growth and innovation in rental products. Next slide, please. So apartments are very beneficial to local businesses and employers. Obviously, they per acre, they deliver a higher number of people, which are potential customers and employees. Rents in Class A three-bedroom apartments in Oro Valley typically range from $1,500 up to $2,500 in some cases. And what we looked at here were several other things. One was the demand for apartments. Valbridge confirmed it in their report strongly. But also, if you look at the other Class A apartment built complexes or developments in Oro Valley, what you find is a very low vacancy rate, high demand. Basically, the vacancy rate that's a little over 5% is considered normal turnover. So for all intents and purposes, these Class A apartments in Oro Valley are basically full. So there's certainly more demand for it. Rents are strong. The bottom two images there, if you remember a few years ago, Mark Taylor built a nice apartment complex there near La Reserve at First Avenue and Oracle. You can see it there, sort of dead center in that aerial photo. So we looked at the impact of that installation on nearby single-family home values. And you can see in the bottom right-hand corner of that aerial photo, there's a bunch of black dots with white numbers. And of course, you can't read them, and neither can I. But what we did was look at a sampling of those to see how their home values changed over time. And so the graph on the bottom left shows the dotted line that's flatter is typical for Oro Valley and the 85737 zip code. They're nearly identical lines. And then the jagged line is a typical home in that neighborhood just southeast of the Mark Taylor apartments. And you can see that Mark Taylor they built in 2014. Since then, the values in that nearby neighborhood have continued to outpace values elsewhere on average in Oro Valley. So the takeaway there is when a quality apartment complex is constructed, it does not knock the property values of nearby homes. Next slide, please. Thank you. Our second proposed option is a rental casita, and I want to clarify. I know there was maybe some confusion, misconceptions about what we're proposing. These are not short-term rentals. These are not Airbnbs, things like that. This is an entire development that is owned by a company, a single operator, and they are all for rent. longer term, typical. They will lease them for 6 months or a year, similar to apartments. But this is a product that has really gained a lot of steam in Southern Arizona. It's gone national, but it actually started in Tucson. We believe those were the first ones that we found. And it is a low slung, single story, partially detached. You can see there's some duplexes in here, but some singletons, and they're basically rental units, again, in a highly amenitized setting, gated, very safe. Again, most people here are renting by choice, just because the rents in here are strong and continue to go up. This is, again, very beneficial to local businesses because it does provide a lot of customers. Very good neighbor, again, single story. So there are a number of these in Tucson. There are dozens of them being built up in Phoenix, and demand is really strong because it is a great transitional use. Really no negative impact here. And again, the question about state shared revenue estimate here is the same. I think it was the same, $135,000. But the property taxes is actually probably a little bit higher for this scenario than for an apartment complex, just because of how the valuations work. But it would be about $250,000 a year in property taxes. Next slide, please. Thank you. So what Planning and Zoning Commission recommended that this single family option, along with the townhome option and the senior care option, all be removed, not from the zoning, but from the list of approved TDPs. We respectfully request that at least this one gets added back in. This is the most compatible use because it's identical to what's nearby. It still provides good economic benefit, not as much. And there's no argument there. But in terms of compatibility, it fits hand in glove. And we know that home builder would love to come in and build basically phase four of Villages of Silverhawk. That said, this is not our first choice. We are in discussions with some groups who are interested in developing the rental casita option in particular. That's our first choice in terms of what we are pursuing. What I will ask, if it pleasures the council, would be to at least add the single family back onto the list, even if it comes with some sort of time lag, a year or two before we would actually be able to exercise it. And that would give us a chance and prove to the town that we are doing everything we can to insert one of the higher density options if those get approved. But this is certainly a very viable, good, and appropriate use as well. This would be a mix of single and two stories. Again, gated, lots of landscaping, still beneficial to local businesses. State shared revenue estimate obviously is lower there, about 50 grand. But the property tax estimate, depending on sales, and Meritage sales have been very strong, we estimate somewhere between 170 and 270,000 a year. So property taxes is strong benefit state shared revenue just because of the lower density is not going to be quite as much. Next slide, please. Conclusions here from our Valbridge report, basically that the higher density residential options are really the best use for the land because they provide the greatest potential benefit, economic benefit to the town and to nearby businesses. Very low risk because demand is high for those. And that's the takeaway here that's driving our application. Next slide, please. Thank you. Ms. Oden mentioned that visibility from Tangerine and First are minimal. This slide here shows in orange the existing hillside that blocks visibility from Tangerine. You have to be at that purple dot or west of there to even catch a glimpse of the property. And even then, the property is a bit higher, so view impacts are minimal. But east of that purple dot, you simply can't see the property. Next slide, please. And here's a great example. East of that purple dot, this is what you see. You see the side of a hill and not the property. Next slide. Thank you. From First Avenue, you will see the property. This is taken from due west of the property there. So you're actually looking over our other commercial piece. Those yellow poles there that you see, those are 25 feet in height, and they represent where the buildings would go approximately. And then behind it, of course, you can see the big tall cell tower. And just for the record, I did pick up my coffee cup. Next slide, please. So this slide shows a distance from existing neighbors. We are well away from anything in Vistoso, obviously, about 1,000 feet away from our nearest neighbor across First Avenue, about 350 feet or more away from existing residents in villages at Silverhawk, phase two there. Phase three, of course, doesn't have any residents yet. And about 800 feet away from our neighbors over in Cat Shadows. And you cannot see the property from Cat Shadows either over there because of that existing ridgeline. However, acknowledging that Villages Phase 3 is under construction, sales, I think reservations are being taken, we felt it would be prudent and good to make sure that anybody considering a house in there was actually anybody building a house in there understands what we're proposing and what the current zoning is. So the signs say in nice big letter, and there's two of them there for anybody who's standing down there. It'll be visible saying existing zoning is commercial, proposed is high density residential. So again, we thought that was prudent and good to make sure anybody who's thinking of buying in there was certainly well aware. And that's not to mention the couple dozen large yellow signs that the town posted about this. Next slide, please. Thank you. So this is from that closest neighbor in Villages Phase 2, the 350 feet away. So this is looking east, and you can see the graded area with the water tank basically due straight ahead. That's Villages Phase 3 under construction. And then to the left of that, kind of where the Catalina Mountains peter out into the hillside, there's another yellow pole. That's a 25-foot pole. That would be where the closest building is on our site. So again, very minimal impact. Next slide, please. These are the trails again, and I just wanted to point out the trail in green. We're pursuing a public trail easement from the county through that that land, which is designated open space by the county. So we think it should work. And if we can thread that needle, we will acquire that easement. Otherwise, we'll be providing that that trail connection on site. Next slide, please. I don't think I mentioned it, but this site was nearly all disturbed previously when ADOT built the Tangerine Road Bridge. So if anybody was wondering why there's really no native or significant vegetation on site, it was because it was all graded by ADOT a few years ago. Next slide, please. And James mentioned at the beginning that we've received a number of letters of support from our neighbors. We've got Northwest Healthcare, La Hacienda, and Dragon View Restaurant, a couple of restaurants. The one in the middle there is from the owner of the Safeway Shopping Center. And then the one on the right is from a local resident. All of these are very supportive of what we're proposing and are requesting support from the town, especially for the higher density residential uses. So again, if it's to your liking, we would respectfully request that single family option get added back into the mix. Again, there's not a lack of economic benefit associated with that. I think that was the word that was used. There's a moderate economic benefit. So even if there's a time lag on that, we would request that be added back in. With that, I'd be happy to answer any other questions. Thank you.
Thank you. So there is a public hearing associated with this agenda item. I'd like to open the public hearing now.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
I'm afraid I need to jump in at this point, and I'm very sorry, but as we were reviewing the agenda, unfortunately, we made an error in posting this evening's agenda. We only posted a public hearing for the rezoning item, and we did not post it for the general plan item. Now, my recommendation to you is go ahead and receive public comment on both items. Mm-hmm. You can hold the one public hearing on the general plan item, but we will be required to continue this to your next meeting to hold the final public hearing on the rezoning on the general plan item before the town council can vote. And my apologies to Mr. Kai. I'm very sorry we missed that. We try very hard to review those things. There's no excuse. So please accept our humble apologies from staff for this inconvenience.
So Ms. Jacobs, do I understand then, because these are coupled together, right? So will this be continued to our January meeting?
Mr. Mayor, in communicating with the town attorney, the council can basically do everything this evening. You can continue to have conversations. You can receive public comment. The presentation has been made. We will just need to do that last checkbox on January 4th to repost it, both items for a public hearing before the town council can render a final vote. So yes, I would, while it won't necessarily be a public hearing on the general plan item, if there are individuals who want to speak, there's discussion that the council wants to have in speaking with Mr. Olin and Mr. Kai amongst yourselves, I would encourage that. And then we'll just have to do that last checkbox on January the 4th.
But just to be clear, no vote tonight.
That's correct, sir.
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to move then to continue this until our January meeting, because it would be my preference to not have all of the discussion on both meetings. I'd like to be able to vote on the same night that we have discussion. So if we aren't going to vote tonight and it's going to be a month until we vote, then I'd like to move to continue it to our January meeting.
Second.
If that's a motion, I would second it.
Well, Mr. Bowen, it was a motion, and Councilmember Bowen seconded it.
Okay, I'm sorry.
No, that's fine.
Mayor, I'm sorry, a point of order for our town attorney.
Okay.
So what it looks like is we only noticed a public hearing for item B, not for item A, and we cannot proceed to item B without
a vote
first doing item A. So I take it sounds like that there's really no public hearing whatsoever that we could hold tonight?
It would not be a public hearing on A, but the mayor, under our town rules, as he frequently does, has the authority to allow public comment. So again, you could have public comment under the normal town rules on A if the mayor so desired. You could do that and or a public hearing on B. You all can still discuss these items amongst yourselves. You just wouldn't be able to vote. And then at the next meeting, we would have to formally have a public hearing on A and B. You wouldn't have to discuss anything further, but you may want to, and it could be duplicative, which is the vice mayor's concern. So you have some options. But as of right now, we have a motion and a second to continue this item. And just to clarify, Vice Mayor Barrett, I assume maybe I was wrong, that motion to continue was to a time certain, that being the January 4th meeting. Is that right?
Yes, that's when we can post a public hearing. Is that correct?
Mary? Items A and B.
Mr. Mayor, a quick clarification. Yes. The first meeting in January is January 6th.
January.
Sorry.
Thank you. Yeah.
Okay, so just to clear right. Where we, Vice Mayor Barrett, the motion you made was to continue this to a time certain, that being January 6th.
Yes.
And whoever was the second.
Councilmember Bowen.
Councilmember Bowen, is that acceptable to you?
Yes, it is.
And you would second that?
I would second moving it to the 6th, yes.
Okay. Mr. Councilmember Solomon, did I answer your point of order?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. Back to you, Mr. Mayor.
And Mr. Mayor, I do believe there are some people who are hoping to speak this evening, but of course that's your call.
Okay, I have a motion on the table, Mr. Cohen. For me to have public comment, how does that fit with this motion?
You can't take the comment now. We have to debate the motion, or the motion could be withdrawn. Those are the two options.
Okay, but if the motion is debated and it's passed, does that then mean I can't have public comment?
That is correct.
Correct.
Well, I would ask that we, if for your consideration, to withdraw the motion so to allow public comment.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
I would be happy to withdraw the motion to allow public comment if Mr. Bowen agrees with that, but then I would like to renew my motion after the public comment, if that would be acceptable.
Mr. Bowen?
Councilmember Bowen?
Yes, Mr. Cohen, is that acceptable, what's being proposed here? Because that's what I would like to do as well. I would like to second the motion after the comment.
Yes, it'll be, I understand that it'll be renewed after the public comment. So, Mr. Mayor, if you choose under the town rules to allow public comment on A, you may proceed.
Okay, I would like to allow public comment on agenda item 3A. And I have two individuals that contacted the town clerk in advance of the meeting, a Mr. Richard Beam and a Mr. Dave Perry. If you could raise your hands, this is your opportunity to address the council on agenda item 3A. So if we could unmute Mr. Perry. Mr. Perry, you have been, you're unmuted. Would you like your video turned on?
Please, if I could, Mr. Mayor.
Yes, let's, staff, if we could turn, we'll just take a moment.
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you, but we just...
I'll start my video. There I am.
There you are.
Live in Oro Valley. Mr. Mayor, may I ask, is the 3-minute time limit still applicable? Apparently it is.
Yes.
Thanks for the opportunity to speak. Happy holidays to all of you. I'm Dave Perry, President and CEO of the Oro Valley Chamber. On December 1st, Lisa and I marked 13 years as proud Oro Valley residents. In the interest of disclosure, our chamber has a $40,000 operating agreement with the town of Oro Valley for services rendered. My comments tonight are not within those services. I will admit to some confusion on what I'm allowed to speak about, but I will say that our chamber stands in support of this general plan amendment and rezoning. We believe these changes are in the best interest of all concerned. We expressed our basic arguments to you all in a letter sent today. You know, a lot of times you all face emotional decisions. I think this one's different. I think this is an economic decision. Fundamentally, this piece of land is underperforming for both ownership and community alike. So we ask, what is its highest and best use? How can we maximize community and economic benefit while protecting the interests of neighbors? You know, I had some conversations about timing. I don't think timing is everything, but it is something. One of those neighbors is the Center for Innovation, which Mary Jacobs alluded to earlier today. And opening is tomorrow. I got to tour it today, and it was a terrifically exciting thing to see what the possibilities are for the creation of jobs and economic activity right here in our midst. You have a letter from Jennifer Schomburg, who's an Oro Valley resident, by the way, the CEO of Oro Valley Hospital, who says, let's do this. because the hospital needs a diversified housing stock to attract talented people. There are other employers, I believe, who are restricted by institutional and corporate policy who would support dense development here as well. You know, we have a chance to do something special with bioscience, but we have to have the housing options and the other amenities that attract talent. Paul alluded to the businesses nearby. They're struggling through a pandemic. They could use the density. And Paul has said many times to this body that Rancho Vistosa will never have the original density identified. That said, we still have all this commercial ground, and those people need in the forms of more residents. You know, I live in the perimeter of that thing. I'm one of the guys who's pushing up the median age, I might add. You know, my wife and I, we dine there, we shop there, we buy groceries there, and we're going to keep doing so. But we could use some help. We need more people to do it so that those businesses can prosper, they can create jobs, and they can create economic activity, and they can generate the sales tax revenue that allows us to keep the shine on the gem in which we live. You know, you got a chance, it's not going to happen tonight, and I will express my disappointment in that, but you've got a chance to create an unmatched level of community and economic excellence, but we need to have the housing opportunities and density to do so. And I'm going to repeat this speech and make it better in January. Thank you for your time and for your service.
Thank you. Staff, thank you for giving Mr. Perry a few seconds.
I appreciate it.
Okay, so if there's others that would like to speak tonight, we have 26 attendees. Mr. David Blanchett, we could unmute Mr. Blanchett. Mr. Blanchett, you're unmuted. Would you like your video turned on?
No, that's okay. Thank you very much, Mayor. I appreciate the opportunity to talk to the council and yourself and all the other members today. My family has recently moved to Oro Valley from the east side of Tucson, and we have grandchildren that live only a mile away, and we really look forward to spending some time with them once the COVID pandemic is over. But, you know, since we are new to Oro Valley, it's great to discover that Oro Valley is such a well-planned community, and we're enjoying the close retail centers and a variety of the retail stores to shop and eat. And my family has lived in the Metro Tucson area for almost 30 years, and we've seen a lot of progress all over Pima County, and I believe that Oro Valley is leading the way. Now that we are homeowners, we want the community to grow and support our local retail businesses. And whenever new residential development is proposed in Oro Valley, it seems like there's a focus always seems to be on keeping densities as low as possible. However, I'm sure that most people in town would rather see reasonable and sensitive development of greater residential densities that will help our struggling retailers. People mentioned the Bash's Shopping Center. I watched that as a really, promising center, and it didn't make it because the Great Recession came in, and we lost a lot of the rooftops that were supposed to be built at that time. But maybe, by bringing in, these new homes, you're going to see more restaurants and, please support, the additional residential development, especially higher density development in locations where impacts to the existing residents would be less. And I think that this plan, it's been very interesting and exciting to see this project presented to us tonight, and any of the four options would be very, very good. I'm happy to hear that the townhomes and the rental units are at the highest return to the city in terms of revenues.
Mr. Blanchett, your 3 minutes has expired.
Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate
it. Thank you for joining us this evening. If there's any others that would like to speak to this agenda item, this would be the time. Okay, Devin, if we could unmute Devin's. Devin, your microphone is unmuted. Would you like your video turned on?
No way, sir. Thank you. Whoa.
You have the floor.
Thank you. My name is Devin Sloan. I am a resident of Oro Valley and have been for about 21 years. First of all, I must say I'm really glad to see James Kai. I've seen your name for 20 years, and it's nice to see your face. So congratulations on whatever's going to happen with this property tonight. But I do, I have a question, actually a couple of them. There's talk about apartments and casitas, and there was a number on the screen at one point about increasing to 394 units from 277 or something. I don't know if I misread that. That's question one. I see that this is also possible to have offices, but I don't see offices at all in any of the concepts. And, the other one was the casitas. I know Mr. Olin last month talked about casitas and being very popular and marketing to single women. And I really, really, really would love it if you'd put a swimming pool in that concept, because single women like swimming pools. That recreation area is too small for single women. Anyway, those are my three concerns. Thank you. Happy holidays, everybody.
Thank you. Mr. Cohen, can we address those questions?
Vice Mayor Barrett, you would...
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Yes.
Okay. Mr. Olin, would you like to address Devin's questions?
Sure. Yes, sir, Mr. Mayor. So the first one was the unit change. So currently the general plan special area policy that was established 15 years ago put an overall unit cap of 255 units on all of the Kai Capri property. So if you remember back to my first slide, it was everything that was green. Basically that whole half section minus a couple of little bits and pieces. Not all of those units have been built. I think there's 227 that have been built, if memory serves, within the sanctuary of Silverhawk, and then the first two phases of villages, and then you add in the ones that will be built on phase three. So about 227 of the 255. While you add the 167 that we're proposing in the apartment concept and the casita concept, and that takes that number up to 394. So one of our text amendments is proposing to change that 255 cap to 394 for the whole project. And the question of offices, it's currently zoned for offices. That's on the existing tentative development plan that was approved about 5 years during the rezoning when it went to C1. So that's not something we're proposing. But that's an existing allowed use. And then, we can certainly fit a rec area with a swimming pool in the casita option.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Olin. Again, this is the opportunity, if there's any members of the public among our 24 attendees that would like to speak on this agenda item, this is your opportunity to do so. If you would raise your hand, give you one more moment. Okay, seeing no raised hands, we'll end public comment. And Vice Mayor Barrett.
Yeah, thank you. Mr. Mayor, I move that we continue this item to our next regularly scheduled council meeting in January.
Second.
It's seconded by Councilmember Bowen. Discussion? Okay, hearing no discussion, Councilmember Bowen.
Yes, I would like to make one comment. I think this is very important. This application was completed on April 8th. Great efforts were made to set up Zoom meetings for our neighborhoods. Analyses were put together. Two planning and zoning meetings were put together. We are here on December 2nd. And somehow, some sort of clerical error stops us from completing this process. And I think that happens not because we don't have a capable staff, but rather because we have staff in the wrong role. As you noticed tonight, Hannah Oden very capably marketed this presentation for our applicant. There was very little for Paul Olin to say when Hannah was done. And I think when the staff is in the role of advocacy, we move out of the role of vigilance and inspection. And really, I don't think this could possibly have happened, except for the fact that we were so invested in getting it done on a certain timeline. And I would encourage in 2021 and beyond that we seriously consider whether or not staff should be presenting applicants' proposals for them. And applicants only coming in at the end and say, well, you missed this and we're going to have this. I really do think we should be massively disappointed by this. A lot of work was done. A lot of people attended a lot of things to see this happen tonight. And really, we need as a staff and a council to say, let the applicant make their application. Let us watch. We'll remain much more alert, and something like this can never happen again. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Council Member Mayor, I
don't want to be in a position of defending the staff, but I'm going to, because I walked the property with Hannah and with Meyer, and we went all over the area. And so they were working hard. They were giving pros and cons as we did it. I didn't feel like I was getting a sales job at that time. And I also want to thank Paul Olin and Jim Kai for coming tonight. I'm sorry we can't bring this to fruition tonight, but I appreciate your attending and I appreciate your presentations. Thank you.
Mr. Mayor.
And then Vice Mayor Barrett, Council Member Solomon.
Thank you. I think Councilmember Bowen missed a very vital, important function of staff. They provided the detailed analysis. The analysis, because of the facts, led to the staff support of approval. Staff wasn't there trying to sell the projects. That's what we have staff for, doing the detailed analysis. That's a basic concept of this form of government that we have. So I totally disagree with his assertions and with his conclusions. That is staff's job. That's why we have staff. They're the ones who have to tell us all the details of the zoning, whether they comply with the general plan, whether they comply with the traffic impact analysis and all the other conditions that are required. So it is, I think, almost inexcusable that staff did indeed miss the public hearing. I agree that unfortunately a lot of people's time has effectively been, it's just an unfortunate situation that people should have to come back several weeks later after so much time and effort. But make no mistake about it, staff doesn't play an advocacy role. Staff does an analysis, detailed analysis based on our detailed ordinances, and they present it to council. And they present their recommendations, and then it's up to council as far as how to proceed. Thank you.
Vice Mayor Barrett.
Yes, Mr. Mayor. I don't know if we're getting astray from the debate on my motion to continue, and I'd like to call the question if I could.
All right. Mr. Standish, let's take a roll call vote.
Vice Mayor Barrett.
Yes.
Councilmember Bowen.
Yes.
Councilmember Green?
Yes.
Councilmember Jones-Ivy? Councilmember Nicholson?
Yes.
Councilmember Solomon?
Yes.
And Mayor Winfield?
Yes. So the motion to continue this item to January 6th passed 6-0. I want to express my, we're not infallible, James and Paul. Nobody knows that better than you. I serve on the agenda committee. This was an oversight on my part as much as anybody. You have my apologies. This was certainly not our intentions. We recognize how much work has gone into this project, and I appreciate your what appears to be a degree of patience with us this evening. So we'll look forward to having you back on January 6th.
Look forward to being here.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Appreciate it.
Have a wonderful holiday with your families.
Merry Christmas.
Thank you. You too. Yeah. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. Thank you.
Okay. Future agenda items. Okay, I'd like to move to adjourn our regular session.
So moved.
I have a second by Councilmember Green. Mr. Standish, roll call vote, please.
Ms. Mayor Barrett?
Yes.
Councilmember Bowen?
Yes.
Councilmember Green? Councilmember Jones-Ivy? Councilmember Nicholson?
Yes.
Councilmember Solomon?
Yes.
And Mayor Winfield?
Yes. So our meeting stands adjourned. I'd like to take a 10-minute break, 10-minute recess before we come back for the study session. So a 10-minute break. I'd like to call the study session to order. And to give folks an update, there are 32 participants in our Zoom meeting. Mr. Standish, item one.
Presentation and discussion regarding the town's updated general fund five-year financial forecast.
Ms. Jacobs.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and members of council. As you may recall, last May, when we presented you with the annual five-year forecast, we were in the midst of a lot of influx in terms of projections. That was at the beginning of the COVID crisis. It was unclear how the pandemic was going to be affecting our economy and our projections. And so at that time, I committed to you a couple of things. First of all, I committed that we would do an update to our forecast and that at mid-year, I would also evaluate how our numbers were coming in. As the council made it very clear during your strategic planning session last February, that you very much wanted to provide some support to employees for the hard work that they do. And we had a lot of discussion about that. There was unanimous support on the part of the council at the time. And then we had to make budget cutbacks because of COVID. And we wanted to make sure that we had a conservative budget. Well, it's been more than 6 months now, and we have some actuals, we have some new information from our various sources that we'll go over with you, but I'm happy to report that this forecast does include a recommendation for a 3% salary adjustment across the board for all of our employees effective the first pay period in February. And the reason why we chose the first pay period in February is because you don't have another meeting until January, so we wanted to get your feedback here. Then we would need to bring an item forward to you for action. And then, of course, there are some administrative things we have to prepare for in order to affect our computer system and make this change and change the ranges and that sort of thing. Again, dependent upon the input that we receive and subsequent approval by the council. But what I'm happy to report, and the staff, Wendy Gomez, this evening is going to provide you with the update of the forecast, is that in general, we feel that it's a strong forecast. We just focused on the general fund because our other funds really aren't going to change that much. We will have a new update for you in another 6 months, our usual schedule that we hope we'll only have to do once, and we'll focus on our other funds at that time. But the general fund, as you know, is our main fund, and that's the one that is the most sensitive to sales tax collections and that sort of thing. So So what I'd like to do now, Mr. Mayor, is turn this over to our Finance and Budget Administrator, Wendy Gomez. Wendy will review where we are, all of the numbers, how we came, what our assumptions have been. I do want to remind you that this is not a budget. This is not a budget. This is a forecast, and this is a piece of information that we use that will be updated again as we prepare a budget for next fiscal year. We will also use the information that we'll get from the council in your strategic planning retreat in February to inform us as to priorities so we can adjust where the actual expenditures are going. So it's our best projection and estimates based on all of the known things that we have, our projections as far as what we think our expenditures are going to be and where, and I think it'll be a good way to help get you familiar with where we are with our financials. So with that, Ms. Gomez.
Thank you, Ms. Jacobs. Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. I'm pleased to be presenting our updated general fund five-year forecast this evening. As Mary mentioned, and I'll touch on again, I do see this as a good news item. I think it's a strong forecast. We're in what I see as an enviable position, quite frankly, compared to kind of what we were looking at the end of May, not really knowing what the impacts of this pandemic may be. Again, just overall very pleased at the picture and positive situation that we're in right now. I will also just reiterate again Mary's statement about the forecast is not a budget document. It should be considered a fluid document. It's going to get continuous updates depending on the information that's available to us. So it needs to be viewed as certainly subject to change, and just because something is assumed in the forecast doesn't make it so. I can jump right in. Next slide, please. Just an overview of the forecast. The update builds on the data that we had presented for our 5-year back in May to council. We have updated our forecast with the current known information that's available to us. So I'd call this a status quo forecast, if you will. It doesn't assume any annexations, no major additional services or facilities added. It's basically what we're looking at currently. The forecast serves as a planning document for future budgets. So it helps guide capacity for CIP projects, for example, capacity for future initiatives. We go back and refer to it, and it's also helpful when we're performing variance analysis, kind of comparing forecasts to actuals and viewing some historical performance too. The forecast, as Mary mentioned, is updated annually as part of the budget process. So this is kind of a mid-year irregular update, if you will. You know, usually we do bring this in as part of the budget process. So you will see that again. We're looking at mid-April, I believe, to bring that back. Some of the sources that we rely on, the University of Arizona, the Eller College, the Arizona Department of Revenue for some of the tax sources are the Joint Legislative Budget Committee and their regular forecasts that they provide, as well as the knowledge and expertise, professional judgment from both town management and staff. So it's a joint effort in terms of kind of what we're looking at and our experience here between the manager's office and finance staff. Next slide, please. Just touching on some of the revenue assumptions, we do assume progress towards the vaccine for COVID-19. There's no future resurgence in the forecast picture, so we are assuming that's steady improvement there and that there's no future impacts that may hit our revenue sources. Local tax collections from COVID continue to be impacted through the remainder of the current fiscal year. So those same categories that we've been mentioning with the monthly financials, restaurant and bar, hotel, with recovery then beginning next fiscal year, so fiscal year 21-22. Online sales tax collections continue their strong growth trend. So we did keep those current trends in there that we're seeing. For the state shared revenues, we do know with almost certainty that we are going to see a reduction in fiscal year 21-22 from COVID, and that is due to the lag on the state shared income taxes. So we do know those are going to drop next year, so you'll see that decline and then recovery following that. Construction sales tax and some of our other development-related revenues, we actually continue the positive above-average trends that we're seeing. So those low interest rates continuing to spur that single-family residential activity, commercial activity. We have anywhere from 300 to 400 single-family residential permits forecasted for the next couple of years. We approach build-out in the outer years of the forecast is what we've assumed, and that's been in the forecast generally, is building in that assumption that we kind of start getting tight on space towards the outer years of the forecast. Although I will say that I think the progression towards that build-out has been a little slower than what we had anticipated with our forecasts, but we do continue to plug that in. Again, there's no annexations or major rezoning assumed in this forecast. Finally, with state or federal aid for COVID, we do have the CARES funding. Obviously, we received in the current fiscal year, but there is no additional funding assumed in the forecast. Next slide, please. Here's the data for the general fund revenues and our major sources there. You can see the taxes. Growing strong into next fiscal year. We see that continuing with healthy growth there with retail, construction sales tax, the recovery in some of the areas that were hard hit from COVID. You do see a bit of a slowdown in the growth towards the outer years, and that is due to construction sales tax and kind of pulling back on that as it's tied to the development, the residential and commercial development. The state share revenues, as I mentioned, you see the dip there for fiscal year 21-22. Again, that's almost certain. So we do know those are going to see a decline next fiscal year, but then recovery after that through the rest of the forecast. Charges for services, and we do have a bit of a boost plugged in there. You know, that's an area that we've seen hit by COVID, and so we do have a little bit of a larger, still very conservative forecast plugged in there for charges for services and then gradual growth thereafter. For licenses and permits, those are going to tie to our single-family residential forecasted activity as well as conservative commercial forecast. Intergovernmental, the main source in that category is the RTA reimbursements for our transit services. So we've got that in there growing relatively slow based on what we've seen. So that is plugged in there. On the grants, obviously the fiscal year 2021 includes the CARES funding. After that, we don't really see a whole lot of growth in this source. Usually it's tied to our personnel increases because these are primarily grants that are funding personnel. So just a bit of a growth in there. For miscellaneous, so that's a small category. The major source in there is some in-lieu income that we received. So we do have a bit of a growth in there based on what we've seen historically. Fines, we don't really see a whole lot of growth there. I think we've got maybe 1% to 2% plugged in there for fines. So that's pretty stable. The interest income, we are projecting a bit of a dip for fiscal year 21-22 for two reasons. Some of which you'll see later on in the remaining slides, but we are looking at a likely decrease in interest rates and interest earnings accordingly. And then also we have for fiscal year 21-22, per our adopted financial policies, we do have a planned transfer of about $6 million to the capital fund, and that is for CIP, future CIP needs per our financial policies. As a result, that would bring down the fund balance in the general fund. And since the interest earnings are allocated based on fund balances, cash balances, that would impact how much is apportioned to the general fund. And then you see some stable recovery there in the future years. And then the transfers in is obviously the transfer from the Community Center Fund for the payback there. And just to note that we'll wrap up on the final year of the forecast. So fiscal year 25-26 would be year 10 of that payback. Next slide, please. On the expenditure side, as the town manager mentioned, we do have a 3% salary adjustment programmed in effective February of 2021. So that is fed in for the remainder of the current year. And then that increase is built into future fiscal years. We do assume continued merits and police step increases each year, starting next fiscal year. We have some modest capacity in the budget for about 4 new FTEs or so each year plugged into the forecast, just looking at the fact that we have had to add a few staff members each year here and there, depending on the needs for departments. So we need to kind of be realistic with that picture and plug in a few there. For the employee-related expenditures, some of the benefit costs, obviously, we have increases programmed in there for PSPRS, ASRS, Social Security, and Medicare that would all tie to the merit step increases that are in the forecast. The health insurance premiums and workers' comp rates assume fairly normal increases with what we've been seeing historically. We do continue the assumed additional $500,000 payment to PSPRS each fiscal year towards our unfunded liability. On the O&M side, operations and maintenance, we assume some normal growth trends, inflation probably around the 2% level or so. No large one-time costs are assumed in that picture. We do have a bit of a jump next fiscal year plugged in, just due to the fact that we did have to kind of trim back on some of those department requests when COVID hit. So there may be a bit of kind of pent up demand there and just some items that we may need to tackle next fiscal year that we held off on. We don't assume any changes to the debt service. So any savings that we may see from potential refinancings or refundings, those are not in this picture. This is current debt service that's assumed in the transfers to the debt service fund. Our transfers for CIP projects are assumed per our adopted financial policy at 5% of sales tax collections. So that is in the forecast. As I mentioned earlier, we are assuming a $6 million one-time transfer next fiscal year to the capital fund that would be programmed in for current and future projects. Again, that is just a placeholder in the forecast at this point. Doesn't make it so, but it is programmed into the forecast. Just a final note, our forecast does preserve council's 25% fund balance reserve policy. Next slide, please. Here are the expenditures in the forecast. You can see the beginning fund balance there. We've got our expenditures by category with the assumptions that I just touched on. Personnel, obviously you see that increasing there in line with the assumptions that we've plugged into the forecast. The operations and maintenance, the dip that you see next fiscal year is shaving off the CARES capacity that was in the budget. So pulling back on that and then normal growth thereafter. On the capital side, same there, that drop off for fiscal year 21-22 is due to pulling back on the CARES capacity that was in there. And thereafter, it's just kind of standard with what we've been seeing with grant funded vehicles, some park needs that may pop up, and IT computer needs as well. And then the transfers out, that's transfers to debt service and the capital fund. And you can see the large jump in fiscal year 21-22. That is where we have the $6 million forecasted transfer to CIP. And then in the years after, it is the 5% of sales tax and the debt service transfers. You can see the forecasted surplus and deficits at the bottom. Those are planned deficits. Those are due to one-time items. But you can see the planned deficit. The large one next fiscal year is obviously due to that transfer out to capital. Stable, low deficits thereafter that can be very easily managed. This is just a forecast, and those deficits are minor, and again, one-time in nature. And then you can see our ending fund balance. We did plug in the reserve percentage as as compared to budgeted expenditures or forecasted expenditures, rather. And you can see that it is over our 25% in each year of the forecast. I believe that is our, actually, we do have one more slide, I'm sorry. We did throw the chart in here as well, just to give people a visual forecast, visual picture versus looking at all the numbers. So you can see the planned expenditure outlay in fiscal year 21-22. That includes the transfer out, but then in years thereafter, stability. And then you see the fund balance with the planned transfer out coming down to in between 10 to 15 million in each year of the forecast. And that is our last slide. And we'd be happy to take any questions you may have.
Before we take questions, I just want to check in to see if there's any members of the public that would like to speak to this particular item. So if there are, this would be your opportunity to ask questions, make comments. You would simply raise your hand or press star 9 on your phone. And there's just for an update, 12 attendees with a total of 29 participants this evening. I don't see any raised hands, so I'm going to go to council. If you'd like, Vice Mayor, did I see your hand?
Oh, sorry, I was just moving it, but I do have some questions, but they can wait if other people might ask some of mine.
Go ahead.
Okay. Okay, thanks. First of all, could you elaborate a little bit more, Wendy, on what is the purpose of that $6 million one-time transfer and what it's designated for?
Sure, absolutely, Vice Mayor Barrett. So per our adopted financial policies, we do have identified that excess reserves above council's policy of 25% are designated towards either capital projects or PSPRS, repaying the unfunded liability. So that is why that's assumed in the forecast. We're essentially looking at the realistic notion that there are CIP needs in our 10-year forecast, significant needs, and the policies give us the ability, give council the ability to do that if that is their desire. And so that is why that was chosen, to plug that into the forecast and purposely bring that fund balance down, still above the 25% for the policy, but bringing that down just to reflect the nature of our financial policies.
Okay, but it or a portion of it could also be used to pay down our unfunded PSPRS balance, correct?
Oh, absolutely. That would be council's call, certainly.
Yeah, okay.
And I'll just add, Vice Mayor, that the forecast wouldn't change. The $6 million transfer will still happen, but that's the kind of input that we'll get from council, and then it would show up in the budget for the following fiscal year, whatever that apportionment would be.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. I have some confusion about the idea that we're proposing a 3% raise across the board and then 5 years of deficit budgets following that. Could you address that or clarify that, maybe Ms. Jacobs?
Actually, I'm going to let Wendy, would you pull up that okay. slide with the and explain what the negatives are? I believe it's the second to last slide.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, thank you.
Sure. Yeah. Actually, I'm not used to sharing my screen on here because the presentation is usually brought up.
I think
there we go.
Yeah, there we go. There you go. Yeah, that's the one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So again, as I mentioned, I mean, these are minimal forecasts in my, these are minimal deficits in my opinion, but the deficits are one time in nature, because if you look at those, the transfers out to capital is designated as one time, and there are also some one time capital and O&M needs that are always assumed in the forecast. I think it is important to note again that just because something is assumed in the forecast doesn't make it so. This is a planning document only. And if we find ourselves in a situation where those personnel increases are not sustainable, that would certainly be revised. So that's you know my take and my opinion on that. But again, minimal deficits, and we would obviously have to continue to reassess that each year, the potential to include merits and steps, which we always do every year regardless.
And if I may also add to that, Vice Mayor, these also do not assume that there is any savings whatsoever in the budget. It assumes we spend absolutely every penny.
That's right.
And we receive and that we budget exactly what our revenues are going to be. And over the last 10 years, we've had excess money at the end of the year because we have vacancy savings, because we have. And so when you get to a couple hundred thousand dollars in there, that's a minuscule rounding error that wasn't worth our time to go back and adjust assumptions. For example, Wendy mentioned that we put some capacity in there for potential new positions. Well, if we weren't able to fund those, then we would just back off. If we didn't need those, then we would just back off. And so it's really kind of a rounding error at that point. This is still a very, very strong forecast, and the $324,000 estimated at the end of this fiscal year is actually less than our we were planning on deficit spending by $1.7 million. And so we're actually on this forecast, because we were planning on a transfer in of some of that excess reserves, we're actually $1.4 million to the good in terms of what our budget is. And so it's a complicated thing, but this is about as close to a break even until you get to the out year that we can, and that is so far, just like all of our other projections, since we do this every year, then we would modify that of every year. Typically when you get to years 4 and 5, they're your best guess. And it also doesn't take into consideration if the council approves the Westward Look annexation and you receive the financial report for that, that's hundreds of thousands of dollars that the town would get. It doesn't take into consideration any future rezonings if they come forward, such as the marketplace, if there are some changes there. So it doesn't take any of that into consideration. This is very, very conservative. Mm-hmm. And with that conservative approach, we still feel that 3% for employees and projecting continued steps and merits is something that is very much sustainable.
Okay, thank you. I have, two sort of requests. One is, as we consider this proposal, which I know we're all interested in rewarding our employees appropriately, but I know there were previously studies done regarding comparisons with the police department, and I assume other comparisons in the staff. And I'd like the town council to please be given those studies so that we can, take a look at what that looks like. So that's my first request. And I'd also like us to have some information about, what other towns and communities are doing in regard to steps and merit increases. And then I do have one concern, and that is regarding the 3% across the board and then 2.5% with steps and merits thereafter, as it relates to our public safety personnel. Because in my conversations pre-pandemic with some of our public safety personnel, I was under the understanding that there may be more that might be needed to bring them up to a competitive level. And I do think that, we've received this CARES Act funding that's been partially designated for public safety and other things like that. And I have felt like throughout this pandemic and these situations, those are kind of our first responders, where they're really putting themselves out there and at risk. And I want to make sure that they're compensated accordingly. And so while I definitely support all the staff, if we have, X bucket, I want to make sure for raises, I want to make sure that we're going to be able to have enough to make sure that we're compensating our our police according to be competitively compensated, and our other staff according to be competitively compensated, rather than necessarily just saying that means 3% across the board, which maybe it does mean 3% across the board. Maybe we'll look at that analysis and find that that's the answer that we end up with. But for me, those are, you know, where we hire law enforcement, where we hire staff, person, like people that work in an office, you know, those may be different positions, and they may need to be compensated differently in order to make sure that they're competitive. So I want to make sure that if we have, you know, so much money available for compensation, that we can get to that level with our public safety where they can be compensated competitively. And so I'd like to see those studies and just be able to have some of that analysis available as we go forward to make that. And maybe we'll come to the same conclusion, but then I can, you know, feel informed about that. Thank you.
Certainly. And Vice Mayor, we have, as you know, we have a new human resources director since the previous one who had done the studies. She has not completed the full-blown salary analysis, but what she has done, and I'm happy to provide that information to you, is the second part of your request, was to look at what are the other communities doing. And the 3% across the board allows us to stay competitive and to stay up to speed with what the majority of our counterpart communities are doing, and we're happy to provide that information to you. But I do want to clarify on the steps and merits. The 2.5% is for merit increases. That's an average. We do 2.5 for a meets requirements and a 3% for an exceeds for non-sworn officers. The sworn officers have a completely different, they're the ones under steps. They get 5%. Mm-hmm. So they're already significantly more. They get 5% for, I can't remember how many steps, a significant number of years. And then they go for 7 years, and then they go to 1.5%. So they're front loaded with their, and that is very competitive, and we're not suggesting changing that at all. And the police, we've been in discussions with the police department, of course, with the union, and we would absolutely continue that level of, and so when we say 2% merits and steps, it's 2% merits slash and steps, which is a whole different step
okay.
plan. Yeah, and so I get it, it's very confusing. We need to take some more time to delve into this. 3% buys us some time to take a look at what other communities are going to be doing in this COVID environment. For example, Tucson's making some changes, Marana's potentially making some changes, and so this will give our human resources department an opportunity to really delve in. Quite honestly, this whole COVID thing has taken up a significant amount of time in human resources. And so we're simply not prepared to go there, which is why we feel confident that this 3% will provide an increase, will keep us current. And one of the areas that we have the toughest time dealing with in terms of our recruitment and bringing people in is the bottom of the range. So we've got to move our ranges up. They're too low, and that's all of them. All of them, all the police ranges would move up by the 3%, and all of our non-police positions. So that would mean dispatchers and their records people and our office people and our administration and that sort of thing. And that's why we feel that the 3% is definitely, a strong move, but not excessive move. It puts us, typically we would have done a 2.5 to 3%. So we're basically making up for the merit that we didn't do this year is basically what we're doing by doing a 3% across the board. We can't do it the way that we typically do, which is because our merits and steps are done on the anniversary date, and it would be a payroll nightmare to do retroactive. So that's why we're recommending this. This is basically in lieu of steps and merits for the current fiscal year, basically sort of reinstating them across the board.
Okay.
So I'm happy to get that information.
Okay. Yeah, I'd still like to see the study that was previously done, because I know there were conversations about it and things like that, but I never actually saw it. And
it was an internal evaluation, and my view, based on the review of our new human resources director, I'm not comfortable using that as the basis of future decisions.
Okay.
So we need to do some more work on it.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Other questions? Councilmember Bowen.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Ms. Gomez, could we go to the interest income slide? I believe it was the second one.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So, Ms. Gomez, if I understand correctly, we project a significant drop-off, as a matter of fact, exactly 50% drop-off in 21-22 and more or less flat levels all the way out to 25-26. For somebody that's kind of new to this, could you help me to understand why we expect that type of fall-off at that time period? And what exactly is driving this? You know, we can say interest rate, but which interest rate and on what fund and on what level of funding are we talking about? Because that's a major drop, yet we have pretty flat levels for 5 years.
Sure. Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, I'll attempt to speak to some of that. And if Dave Gephardt wants to add further details, he can. But looking at our regular updates from PFM, which is our asset management firm, and looking at our average terms on our investments, it is very likely that we are going to see those interest rates drop. We're already seeing that happen with treasuries currently, and so some of that's anticipated, and it's pretty well known and expected at this point. 50% admittedly, is it a bit of a swag? Yes, but we did need to plug an acknowledgement that is coming up in the forecast. And then the years thereafter is conservative growth. We may see larger improvement after that, but again, pulling back, knowing those interest rates are gonna drop, as well as the fact that the fund balance is going to come down significantly in this fund if we choose to do that $6 million transfer that we mentioned. That will definitely impact how much of those earnings are allocated to the general fund. And I can let Dave speak to any further specifics that you may have if he desires.
Councilmember Bowen, does that answer your question, or would you like Mr. Gephardt to?
That answers my question. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, thanks. Others, I can't see this.
Mayor Winfield?
Yep, Councilmember Nicholson.
All right, this is for either Dave or Wendy. So I'm looking at there's actually a flyer you guys sent out. It's the Know Your Town's Budget. It's a two-page document. I don't know if you guys are familiar with it. Mm-hmm. But in there, okay, so in the bottom right corner of it, it was talking about for fiscal year 2021, for 2020-2021, the town plans to draw down or spend approximately $10.1 million from its overall beginning fund balance, a total of $51.7 million, leaving $41.6 million on hand for the overall fund balance at year-end. These are planned uses for funds that have been building up over a period of time, and they're being used primarily to cash fund capital project in order to avoid borrowing funds to complete these projects. So my question is, we're spending $10.1 million this year. How much have we spent the last previous years for drawing that down?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Nicholson, I would probably have to get back to you on those numbers. I don't have those in front of me, unfortunately, at the moment, but I can get you that information.
Is it over $5 million a year, roughly?
Again, I would have to follow up on that. I'm sorry. Okay. I don't have that in front of me right now.
And then the other part is, to cash fund capital projects. So projects that we did use, let's say bonds for, we're gonna cash those out, pay those off?
Let me pull up the document real quick,
okay,
if you wouldn't mind.
Yeah.
I believe that planned use is all town funds, not just the general fund. But let me open that up. I was not anticipating
that's
referring to that.
I was just Googling it, and then I found that. I'm like, oh, wow, this is actually good information. So.
Oh, that's okay. That's okay. So you're looking at page two. Right?
Yeah, the bottom right-hand corner, very bottom right-hand corner. Mm-hmm.
Yes, that is all town funds. That is not just the general fund. So I would need to go back. If you'd like historical figures for those, I would have to go back and gather those.
Okay. But I mean, has anything really changed that we're now trying to pay those off or anything like that? That's just typical. We generally do that every year.
That's correct.
Okay. I mean, I would like, I don't want you to nickel and dime me, but I mean, if I had an idea that it's gone up double or something like that, I'd like to know that. But I mean, if it's gone 10-15%, you don't have to run numbers. I'm not going to have you do hours of work just to satisfy that question. But
okay.
Yeah, because I mean, well, the one thing is right now, like we just talked about the bonds, you know, last council session, and the interest rates are super, super cheap. So if you can borrow at below inflation rates, I mean, you should borrow, in my opinion. But I mean, mm-hmm. you don't want to go in debt, but you can take it and then use the excess cash, like I said earlier, pay down higher interest. So, but anyways, okay, thanks.
Other questions on the presentation? I'm not seeing any additional questions. So, Wendy, I want to thank you for the preparation for tonight's meeting. And I want to say that I certainly support the town manager's recommended 3% salary adjustment. And I appreciate the work that's gone into this. So thank you.
And Mr. Mayor, yes, I want to thank the finance team. They've done a tremendous job. If you knew the complexity of the software program that is used to do all of these, let me tell you, it was a significant work effort. So I want to thank them, and especially Wendy and Michael Dykman, who is not on the presentation, but did a lot of the heavy lifting. So Mayor, members of council, what I will be doing is bringing forward to you an action item on your January 6th agenda for your consideration regarding the salary adjustments for employees. And we will provide that additional information that the vice mayor has requested. So appreciate your time this evening and thank you for your input.
Thank you, Wendy.
You're quite welcome.
Yes, thanks.
Study session stands adjourned. Good night, everyone. Happy holidays.
Good night.